knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Chuck.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Obviously, we didn't talk about it last weekend.
Okay.
Because, of course.
What happened last weekend?
It was Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah, it was.
I didn't even know that. I completely forgot about it.
Completely forgot, too.
I woke up on the day and people were like, oh, it's Friday the 13th. And yeah. I was like, oh, that's a real thing that can happen.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
How about that?
Look at all of you.
Yeah. Is that it?
So, in honor of that.
Oh. My favorite horror movie.
Is there, no, I don't even, I was more like, was there a situation in real life where you were actually like, holy shit, afraid? You know, like I thought I was going to die.
Yeah. I mean, I got robbed at gunpoint when I worked at a gas station.
Right. Well, that'll do
it. There's that.
Did you think you were going to die?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Right.
I didn't think the guy was going to shoot me. But I was scared as shit.
Yeah.
I
mean, of course.
In the moment, I didn't think that there was any reason that this would turn into a murder, but that didn't mean I didn't still go into shock.
Right.
There was that. There was the time my car skid off the road on some black ice. Mm-hmm. Like those moments are terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've had other moments in the car driving for sure. I'm a really bad driver.
You're a bad driver.
Or I was. I haven't driven in like a decade.
But yeah,
like,
I kind of suspected there's a reason that you and I have never been in a situation where you were driving.
Well, I mean, I live in Chicago. I have very little need for a car. And then, since I moved here, I haven't really, I kind of explored the possibility of getting my driver's license back.
Oh yeah.
But I'm just like back when I used to drive, I'm kind of distractible. I'm not good at defensive driving.
Driving
doesn't interest me much. It's not exciting. I don't know. So there are a number of instances where I had some kind of close calls.
Yeah.
Like every time I had to merge onto the freeway, particularly back when I lived in Missouri.
Yeah.
Like if I'd be going to Jefferson City or, you know, some other small town in Missouri for fun or something.
Yeah.
That just terrified me. Merging onto incoming traffic. On the highway.
That's crazy.
Every single time I was like, well, this is where my car, I'm dead. And of course it never did, but,
That would make driving the most exciting experience though, right? How is it that you're simultaneously bored and the moment anything?
Well, it's
because
I would
happens.
Avoid that.
Ah, I gotcha.
I would take like side streets if possible. Like take access roads.
Oh, just to avoid merging onto.
Absolutely. Yeah. You would have been adds like half an hour to the trip. I don't give a shit.
That's amazing to me.
I like that I've decided to expound more on this than getting robbed at gunpoint. But,
but we've talked about getting robbed at
gunpoint. Maybe we haven't. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I'm beginning to forget what it is we've discussed on the show and
totally.
In real life.
Yeah, and the fact that we have so many episodes that we've done, I'm like, I don't want to repeat stories.
Right?
I only have a few.
Right.
Well,
you were making fun of me for writing down questions. I was like, no, I don't want to repeat questions.
Right.
Not, I'm fucking struggling.
Glad you didn't ask about scary movies because I hate them.
Yeah, I know. Why would I give a shit about scary movies?
So Jordan, this podcast where I know plenty about Mortal Fear, and also Alex Jones.
And I know, a little bit about one and none about the other.
Right. So today, Jordan, what we're going to be doing is, I know on the last episode I said that I was going to stick around in the present and find out what's going on with Alex and watch him as whatever his story is goes the direction it's going.
Right, and it didn't go anywhere, apparently.
God, I listened to it. It's so boring. He's just continuing his crusade against abortion, which, I mean, we've already seen how extreme he's getting.
Yeah.
Why listen to it again?
Yeah.
It's just continuing.
Right.
What's the point of that? For our show, at least. What's the point of that? And then he did his debate night coverage, the Democratic debates, it's just stupid.
How'd it go?
It's fucking dumb as shit.
Did they
Robert
win?
Barnes is on, I think
what
he's-
What is Barnes doing?
I don't know, I think he's hashtag Yang Gang though. I think he's into Andrew Yang, which doesn't surprise me
for various reasons. I'm still sticking with Avatar Aang. That's my gang.
The only thing that I thought was really interesting at all is that Barnes is being brought on, and it's really discussed quite a bit how he's a political gambler. And it really seems like he's trying to handicap the field so the audience can bet on the election.
No shit!
Which is very weird.
That's actually kind of very interesting.
It's a strange twist for InfoWars to do to their audience. Like, not only are you getting the best political analysis ever, you got gambling bets.
Right. When they're
from Robert Barnes, constitutional lawyer.
See, now that I actually really like that. I think that's hilarious.
An idea, it's very funny. Alex's Sandy Hook lawyer is coming on the show as an expert in political gambling to tell you which Democratic primary candidate to bet on.
Listen to that sentence. That's hilarious.
Which you can only do in any meaningful way outside of the United States.
Yes.
There are places you could bet like pennies on, but it has to be as like, it's not gambling, it's predictive. Like there's a weird technicality, but it's only for basically like you could win 50 cents betting on a candidate. But if you go overseas where it's legal, it's very weird. But I was like, that doesn't make a show. That's not an episode.
No.
So I decided I had to go back to the past. And so today we're going to be going over April 3rd through April 8th, 2013. And man, I'm reaching a point where, it's becoming harder and harder for me to deny certain things about Alex Jones. And one of them is I think we were dumb to ever consider him, being stupid. Stupid evil continuum thing.
Okay.
I think that we were foolish that we ever thought that stupid was a possibility.
Oh shit, so we're...
I'm beginning to consider the possibility that the appearance of stupidity is cover for the evil.
Okay.
I'm not saying this is the case, because this would be a crazy thing to just say with no real definitive evidence.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be totally surprised if Alex's whole, like, being dumb is an act at this point.
Right.
I see trends that are happening here that are, like... this wouldn't happen by accident.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll all make sense as we get through it, I hope. Otherwise I'll just look weird. But before we get to, down to business on any of that, we gotta take a moment and say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show. So, first of all, Brad, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
I like to believe that that's Brad from the Real World Road Rules Challenge.
It could be Brad.
I hope so. He lives in the Chicagoland area.
Does he? Brad, hit us up.
Probably not him.
Nope.
Next, Nick. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Nick. Next, Pally. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Pally.
Next, Clayton. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Clayton.
I like to believe that's David Clayton Thomas, lead singer of Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, yeah? I like to think that's Clayton, fictional character.
Neither of those are people named Clayton. But thank you so much. Next, Spencer. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Spencer. Next, Zelude. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Zelude.
And finally, this is a person who I got a message from with a special name. And I feel like I have to let them jump the line because of this special name.
Okay.
By the time we'd get to their shout out, this might be a completely anachronistic name.
Okay.
So I feel like...
What, Khaleesi?
In a strange way, I got to bump the line a little bit. This person donated on Elevated Level. We appreciate it very much. So Boris is just as bad as Donald. Why the fuck is the UK being affected by memes? Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much. Boris is just as bad as Donald. Why the fuck is the UK being affected by memes?
Yes, thank you very much.
He may not be long for office. You never know. We don't know what's going to happen. By the time the time comes, unfortunately, I've just revealed to the audience possibly that the way you skip the line is give some time sensitive joke name for yourself.
No, we can't be doing this.
I may have set a terrible precedent. But thank you very much. If you're out there listening and you like what we do, you like the show, you can support our work and the continued existence. And existence isn't fair.
Yeah.
This show will exist with, in the form that it exists. But you can support the show by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Yeah, that is timely in that either he won't be president for that much longer, or the UK won't be a thing for that much longer. So,
or everybody will. We will all be meme.
Yeah, we...
Forget that Borg nonsense. We will all become incorporated into meme.
It's never going to happen.
So before we get to April 3rd through 8th, I just want to play one. I didn't have an out-of-context drop from this this time, so I figured why not? I did listen to the present-day episodes in September, so here's an out-of-context drop from one of the present-day.
So, Pootie Pie just cucked the ADL.
Great. Alex is celebrating Pootie Pie taking back his $50,000 donation to the Anti-Defamation League.
You know, I just, you don't have to go that far back before people are in, like, full on, you're fucking crazy. Like, seriously, go back 20 years and tell somebody that someday a sentence like that will exist and they will punch you in the face.
A guy who makes, you know, billions of dollars...
fucking video games
and doing racist pranks, maybe. So Alex's telling of the story is that the ADL, right?
Yeah.
So Pootie Pie made this offer of this donation,
right?
And then the ADL didn't thank him properly. So Pootie Pie,
was that it? Because I've heard the narrative being said that a lot of people were mad at him for caving to Jewish interests.
Right.
What I didn't realize that it was, in fact, the Jews just weren't being nice enough.
That's
why he had to take their money away.
That's Alex's spin on it. Although I think the reality is closer to he got a lot of bad tweets from racists
anti-Semites.
So cool. Good spin. So we jump in here on April 3rd, and it's like... there are these times when I'm listening to Alex's show and like it sucks. And there's a lot of stuff that sucks throughout a lot of this.
Yeah.
But then there's other times when I'm like, oh boy, here we go. I'm interested. Mm-hmm. I like this beginning.
Okay.
It doesn't last long, but I really like this.
And then I've got something that's a little bit fun, but it's also painful. And I don't normally cover goofy things unless it's educates people. And I heard last week, hey, Alex, cover the Reptoid Secret Service agent.
Oh.
And I didn't even go look it up. I'm like, no, I have serious things to do.
Eyebrow raise.
I was just talking to a senior Secret Service person the other day. Oh, it was amazing. Anyway, side issue.
What?
And so people kept sending me the video, so I happened to watch it yesterday afternoon. We're going to be playing it coming up. And I went, I've seen that guy before. The one they're saying is a Reptoid. He says extremely male features. I go, I've seen that guy before. That's a Secret Service agent that's spoken out. And ladies and gentlemen, I snapped my fingers for about 20 minutes doing a search on YouTube.
What?
It's too long.
What?
And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? I found him, and we've got his name. And he is a guy that quit and spoke out for the Second Amendment. And it's probably a psyop against him or something. The point is...
that is my favorite kind of thing.
What?
That's where I want Alex to live. Right there. That is like, okay, so look, there's these people and they're putting out this video about how there's a reptilian working in the Secret Service, right?
Right.
Right. So, okay, you guys know that. But the truth is that's actually a Secret Service guy who spoke out in favor of the Second Amendment.
Right.
So the globalists are telling you that he's a reptilian.
Uh-huh.
Even your conspiracy theories are globalist run.
Okay.
I love it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's
amazing. I'm not gonna take that away from him. And the way that he gets into it is such a fucking, look, I don't have time to talk about your bullshit.
Right.
So,
I like
when I looked at it and I was like,
stuff.
I'm going to need to talk about their bullshit, but it's not your bullshit. It's my bullshit
right.
I'm talking about.
This is
your bullshit is dumb. My bullshit is smart.
This has become too big for me to ignore. There's too much attention on this, and I feel like I could piggyback it a little bit. Oh, and also, as we learn later, Glenn Beck talked about it.
Yeah, there we go.
Which kind of forces Alex's hand to have a take on it.
Yeah.
So Alex is also missing a crucial element of this story, which is kind of one of the reasons it caught so much momentum in the conspiracy community. Sure, this was a video of a Secret Service agent who appeared to be a reptilian, but that wasn't the central focus of a lot of the framing when the videos were posted on YouTube. Here's a description that went along with the video. Quote, a shapeshifter alien humanoid working for the powers that be caught in high-definition video during an event of the Zionist cabal.
Yeah! Oh, boy.
You see, the guy was protecting President Obama during a speech he gave to AIPAC,
right,
or the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee.
Right.
And this was a massive part of the conspiracy. It was that the reptilian shapeshifter was there because the meeting was a highly important Zog affair.
Gotcha, gotcha. The
Zionist-occupied government.
Okay. So, and, so what you're saying is the reptoids cucked the ADL, is what you're saying.
I guess, yeah. So it's Alex is kind of not engaging with that part of it.
Gotcha.
Is why a lot of these internet dub-dubs were interested in the first place.
Right.
It was proof that the AIPAC is so important that there's even interstellar involvement.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like I said, one of the reasons that Alex is, forced his hand on this thing is that because Glenn Beck has talked about it, and that offends Alex. So he uses it as an opportunity to do a lot of fucking time yelling about Glenn Beck on this episode. And some of his complaints are kind of funny.
I have a clip of Glenn Beck covering this, laughing at people that believe in the Bilderberg Group and Illuminati, and he laughs and says it doesn't exist.
To be clear, that's not about the aliens. That's about the Alex's narratives about the billions of bullets that Homeland Security spies. So just I don't want it to appear that because we were just talking about the aliens, that that's what the pronoun reference was.
This is days ago, last week. And I'm not here to bash Glenn Beck, but I mean, that's pure gatekeeping bull. Glenn Beck wants you to believe the world government is only George Soros when it's Bill Gates, it's all of them, okay?
So he takes issue with him putting such a sharp focus on George Soros.
You just can't take an entire body of work at once, can you?
Alex even kind of scoffs at Glenn Beck calling Soros a Nazi collaborator.
You just can't take a totality of work. You got to look at a small part of it. Because once you start looking at all directions, you find out this guy doesn't believe a goddamn word of anything.
Well, he believes some things, I think. And that's one of the things that I think is the most important, of doing this show is separating the real from the facade. And the things that don't go away, the things that are consistent are the things that are intrinsic to him.
Yeah.
And there are very few things.
Guns.
And it seems to be whiteness and guns.
Whiteness and guns.
Those seem to be just about the only things.
Two.
Yeah. So I think that speaks volumes. So he has some more complaints about Glenn Beck. Actually, this is kind of a good way for me to say that that sentence I just said was kind of inaccurate. Masculinity is also
apologies.
His version of masculinity is also very important. He doesn't think Glenn Beck is manly enough.
And I'm not here to attack Glenn Beck, except he is attacking me, I've learned now, every week, telling his listeners, you can't trust Alex Jones. No, you can't trust Glenn Beck.
Ooh.
And I'm on a lot of the same stations with him. For program directors, you know it, you hear it. I didn't start this.
Says the guy who started
it. Okay, the bullets are real. The FEMA camps are real. Fukushima's real. I'm real, buddy. And I know effeminate men don't like real men. I get it. You trollop. Get out of my way. I'm trying to save this republic. All right?
All right. I think there's plenty of effeminate men who like real men. But leaving that aside, this is so ridiculous.
I want a laundry list of right-wing figures to call each other trollops.
You trollop!
You trollop, sir! You trollop!
I challenge you to a duel!
Dancing amidst my friends and I this way!
Yeah. I mean, like, there is a lot of this, too. Like, this is not the only instance of him, like, calling Glenn Beck light in the loafers and, like, these sorts of homophobic-coded insults throughout this episode. But I think that's a pretty good example of it. So he also is convinced that Glenn Beck is just afraid because Alex Jones is getting big.
Right.
And he's getting popular. He just went on Piers Morgan and yelled at him.
Yeah.
Like, everybody loves Alex now, and Glenn Beck is fucking jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes another claim here in this clip that is also incongruous with his Alex's present day shit.
Glenn Beck gets freaked out because, you know, just on Justin TV, we'll get 3.5 million viewers. I mean, just in a day or two, just with a video stream. Glenn Beck goes on air and says it doesn't exist. Because I guess Peter Thiel, the big libertarian Bilderberg group member, has got his thumb all over the liberty movement. I mean, I just don't even know what to say anymore. Okay, all right, there are no bullets, there's no Bilderberg group, and there's no global government either, Glenn. Oh, but you're not gatekeeping, Glenn. Sure, I'm the liar. Oh, by the way, he calls me a fascist and a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
Because, folks, the globalists know I'm for real.
Gotta say, I like Alex's version of Glenn Beck. In 2013, I'm not sure it's an accurate portrait of everything Glenn Beck's up to, but hey, he keeps calling me a fascist and a piece of shit, and I'm a liar. Like, well, gotta give it up to that Somali pirate. He is not wrong about any of that stuff.
And he's correctly pointing out Peter Thiel running everything.
Well, Alex is.
Yeah, I know.
But Alex is saying
that
Glenn Beck has been bought off by Peter Thiel.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. That's Glenn Beck was saying
That's the incongruous part with how involved in Trump's campaign and transition team Peter Thiel was.
Right.
And just a few years back, Alex is like, he's trying to co-opt the entire Patriot move. He should remember the things he thinks.
When he's thinking about things and he doesn't have a monetary interest in the opposite being true, he's pretty right on, you know?
Well,
Trump is a fucking gangster who doesn't have any money.
Uh-huh.
Peter Thiel is trying to co-opt the Liberty Movement.
Uh-huh.
The Koch brothers are fucking thieves. Who else? What else do we got?
I don't think that was his conclusion.
It was close enough to it.
It's weird. He's really, really mad at Glenn Beck. He spends an inordinate amount of time on this episode screaming about Glenn Beck and kind of threatening him, too.
Yeah.
Like, Glenn Beck, you do not want me to focus on you. Sort of thing. Like, I just want you to like me and we can move forward and both be patriots and blah, blah, blah. It's all nonsense.
Oh, boy. So we're starting up we're going to get into a little rap beef and then we're going to come together. I'm going to go on your show.
I think there's probably, I mean, it might be sort of the same thing that he tried to do or he succeeded in doing with Rogan.
Yeah.
The sneaky snake gambit.
Yeah, we will
call it. it does kind of feel like the possibility of a fight and then coming to detente. And it works for everybody. It works for both of us. We both get a lot of press out of this. We both get to say horrible things about each other.
That are true.
And then make peace in a big, Camp David summit.
Yeah.
Call Steve Pachanik. He can preside over it.
Get the Taliban in here.
By the way, big developments on Steve Pachanik coming up later in this episode.
Oh, I believe it.
He insinuates himself into the show in one of the most amazing ways I have ever heard.
All right.
I'm so excited to tell you all about it. But before we get to that, Alex has to make a really weird claim. For years and years, one of his most consistent things is like being convinced and telling his audience that the globalists and the Homeland Security, all of them have decided that white people are terrorists.
Yes.
Right? And so he's so against that. He makes a stunning claim in this next clip.
When you see terrorist, remove that and say patriot, good guy, real man, head screwed on straight, a threat to the foreign globalists that are taking us over.
That is not good. Because sometimes they are terrorists.
Yeah. You know, it's either that or he's coming out as pro-terrorist.
Well, I think he is. I mean, I think he is pro-white terrorist.
Right. Maybe he's just pro-all terrorists. Did we consider
that?
I mean, like, what else explains that you got to give it up to the Somali pirates? Maybe he just really actually loves terror. He's covering for the 9/11 saying that was an inside job. He's actually disappointed because they weren't real terrorists. They were fake terrorists. The only people who can be terrorists are real men, patriots, with pride in their country, trying to take down the foreign globalists.
I mean, he hates, revolutionaries in Central and South America, though. Like, any communist that would be labeled a terrorist, he's super against.
Well, yeah, but that's because they're not patriots.
Yeah, okay. I guess he likes a certain type of terrorist.
He likes a certain type of terrorist.
Okay. I'll side with you on that. I'll give it to you there. So, Alex has a weird sort of couple of narratives based on news stories that he's throwing out on this episode that I think are such clear indications of how his brain works. Like, I can't stress enough, like, how this is a fingerprint of just how his processes work. And it's pretty impressive.
I have an article here. Dallas adds security for county officials because they don't know who. They're saying white supremacist. And I know the MO. White supremacists do have a history of shooting cops and prosecutors. No, nothing like the Mexican mafia's history. I'd say 70% chance it's a Mexican gang, a real cartel. 20 to 30% chance it is something like a white supremacist group.
So what's going on here? He doesn't explain this story at all. There were like some murders of district attorneys officials in Texas. So he does. I guess maybe he covered this on like the nightly news or something like that. He hasn't brought it up on the actual show yet.
Yeah.
So I guess he's relying on his audience to be aware of the story. It's very strange. But the story he's talking about, the actual news story about adding security, is out of a local Dallas outlet discussing this idea of whether or not, because there's like areas where they have to go from the building to parking and it's unprotected area. When there's been murders in the area of district attorney's officials, like it kind of makes sense if the person's still on the run, we should not, it could be dangerous to go to your car. It's clear you're a target. So the reason, like I said, it's being discussed is because in early 2013, there were a string of murders in Kaufman County, Texas, and two of the victims were the chief assistant district attorney and the criminal district attorney in the county. And the third victim was the latter's wife. It's clear there was targeting. Undeniable the pattern.
Yeah.
There were some conversations in the media that the culprits were members of the Aryan Brotherhood, and there were some reasons to suspect that that was a possibility. For one, 34 members of the Aryan Brotherhood had just been indicted, I believe it was in Houston, right around the time. Secondly, the chapter in the area is described as, quote, particularly violent by the SPLC. Third, possibly most importantly, prior to the beginning of the murder spree, the Texas Department of Public Safety released a warning that the Aryan Brotherhood had made threats of retaliation that the department found credible. There's plenty of reason to think that these guys were definitely folks worth considering as possible suspects, because the Kaufman County District Attorney's Office also was involved. There was a bunch of organizations that were involved in the case that ended up getting these 34 members indicted, but like they were one of them.
Yeah.
So it makes sense if they're threatening retaliation, we're one of the groups that was involved in that. Now two people have been murdered.
A third,
the wife, you know, there's suspicion. It makes sense.
Yeah. Who murdered those guys? Was it those guys who explicitly said they wanted to murder guys like that? Could be those guys.
It's worth considering.
Yeah.
So Alex hears that, and his gut instinct, based on zero information, is to defend the white supremacist group and say it's more likely it was Mexican cartel gangs.
Yeah.
He literally has no reason to say this. You have one violent white organization and one violent Mexican organization where the violent white one was just the subject of a high-profile bust and had threatened to retaliate, and you see what Alex's instincts lead him to do.
I'm going
to
say it's Latinos.
That's what he does.
That's it. That's
for
it.
For no reason.
That's it. That's it.
Like, if you were a media figure and you said, I think this is white supremacist gangs, you would have reason to say that based on the available information. Ultimately, you'd be wrong.
Right.
But you would have a reason for that suspicion.
It looks possible.
Alex has no reason for that suspicion.
Right.
Just bigotry.
All right. So we've got all this evidence going on. All of it's circumstantial. I can't prove anything yet. But it suggests that our main suspects are going to be these Aryan Brotherhood guys. Oh, I got a counterpoint. What if it's the Yakuza?
I think you might not be into Japanese people. I think that's what's going on here.
You think that's on me?
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, it was neither the Aryans nor the cartel. The guilty party was a man named Eric Lyle Williams and his wife, Kim. Eric was a former attorney and justice of the peace in Kaufman County, but he'd been caught on camera stealing $600 worth of computers, which ultimately led to him being convicted by the justice system in Kaufman County. According to his wife, he immediately came home and began plotting his revenge. Kim says that Eric kept her high on morphine through the period while he was plotting the murders, so she didn't really experience the situation clearly, and now that she's in prison and clean, she seriously regrets that she didn't do anything to stop him. Anyway, that's who committed the crime. Though it wasn't the Aryan Brotherhood, the police had very good reason to suspect them as being involved. Though it wasn't the Mexican cartels, Alex had absolutely zero reason to assume that they were involved.
Right.
This is an incredible display of his racism, and I think it's a really good example of how that stuff penetrates so much of his coverage.
Yeah.
This is a seemingly innocuous, unrelated story. His gut instinct is to deflect criticism of the white supremacist gang even though he's like, well, they do have a history of murdering police. In the abstract, but in this specific case, no, it wasn't that it was Mexicans.
I give it a 20-30% chance. I don't know what that means.
Right?
Can we get somebody on here who handles kind of betting situations?
Oh no,
can
he doesn't know Barnes yet.
Can we get Barnes on here to tell me how I should bet on a white supremacist terror?
From a narrative and a show perspective, what you have is a pretty clear cut example of a place where he is running interference for the perception that Aryan nations, Aryan Brotherhood, were involved in this, and pointing the finger at Mexican cartels.
Absolutely.
For no reason. Well, he kind of does have a reason, but it's a bad reason.
And here's NBC. Intruder killed while breaking into Colorado prosecutor's home. And guess what? The prosecutor used a semi-auto to take him out. And you notice they don't want you to know if it was a white supremacist, they'd already be saying it was a white supremacist. Probably Mexican mafia, folks.
What do you mean?
Probably a worshiper of the Grim Reaper. That's what all those groups worship. 5-6 different versions of the Grim Reaper. It's a death cult. You know, it's like the ninja. They're into being killed. They don't care.
Oh, boy.
That's not the ninja.
No. So Alex is now saying the Mexican cartels are death cults.
Yeah.
And they probably were involved in this home invasion where the person got killed because they're targeting prosecutors.
Okay. Okay.
They're targeting district attorneys. They're targeting the legal system.
Hold on one second.
Right.
His justification for assuming with no evidence that it wasn't a white nationalist group and instead was a Mexican cartel killing these people is because another state, he is assuming that because they didn't say it was white supremacists, that means it's obviously a Mexican cartel.
Right.
Jordan? So that can be used as evidence in our previously aforementioned.
Uh-huh. I hate to put it this way. But you perfectly understand what's going on.
I really do.
That is exactly what he's doing. So the story Alex is referencing to strengthen his assertion that the Kaufman County killings are Mexican gang is who the people who did it were is about the chief deputy district attorney out of Colorado. Her name was Heather Stein, who, along with her husband, killed an intruder who was breaking into their home recently. At this point. They both shot the guy.
Yeah.
There was a scuffle. She shot one bullet. He ended up shooting three. They all hit him.
Jesus.
Pretty spectacular, aim.
Wow.
So the intruder was found to have no connection to the couple and was actually from Michigan. He tested positive
for Michigan cartel of Mexico.
He tested positive for meth, oxycontin, morphine, and weed in his autopsy, which probably explains a little bit of his behavior.
That could.
It's quite a cocktail.
That is a bunch.
Yeah. With very different effects on you.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. I wouldn't even know where to begin feeling.
Mm-mm. No one suspected that this was the Aryan Brotherhood because the circumstances that led to the suspicion in the other case weren't relevant to this case. No threat had been made, for instance.
Right.
But Alex, he's certain this was another case of Mexican gangs trying to kill legal employees.
There's really no other conclusion to draw, Dan.
The man who was shot that night was named Joshua Stevens, so I'm going to assume that Alex is wrong on this one.
Yakuza again!
And guess what? His name had been released by April 2nd, the day before this episode is being recorded, so Alex has every reason to know that, and yet he is still here telling them that this was a Mexican cartel gang violence. It's nonsense.
Oh, God, it's...
Because they're a death cult.
It must feel so good to be that lazy and still get paid a lot of money.
But this is where we get into that, like... This stupidity is cover for the evilness that he's actually disseminating.
Right.
So the actual case is really weird, and I'm not sure anyone fully knows what happened. It could have been an attempted burglary, but it also could have been a horrible misunderstanding that was fueled by these drugs that the guy was on. The Stein's home is actually a converted hotel, so there's a decent chance that when Stevens banged on the door, he thought it was a place he could rent a room. From there, because he was so fucked up on these drugs, the situation escalated and a fight broke out. The DA's report does reflect circumstances that are not really what you'd expect if someone was trying to break into someone's house.
Mm-hmm.
So the question definitely lingers, you know,
because
it doesn't look like a break and entering, but also because he was so fucked up, it could be a really weird break and entering.
Right.
But because it's a hotel, he could have looked up online or something and thought that he could get a room. It's very, very weird.
Yeah, with that number and variety and severity of drug in your system, even if he was, nobody is capable of telling what he thought he was seeing.
Right.
Even him.
whatever the case is, the DA found that the Steins had acted completely within the law, and their actions were in self-defense, so they didn't end up getting charged with anything. Anyway, Alex Jones is a huge racist who's just going around blaming everything on Mexican gangs for no reason, with no evidence, just because he's a prejudiced piece of shit.
Yep.
It's crazy. I was listening to this, I'm like, what is going on? Why are you doing this? I mean, we know why.
Yeah. That's just really egregious, though. That's really bad.
It's really, really bad.
But
again, this is a point that I already made, but I really need to reinforce this. This is such a good example of how this bigotry and this prejudice infests the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just when he's talking about race issues. It involves all of these, the way he covers a lot of stories.
Yeah.
A lot of times I skip over stuff that's kind of like this, but this was so egregious that it was like, this is a great case in point, case study of this kind of behavior. How the tentacles of prejudice just are everywhere.
Yeah, it's not like he's injecting race into every conversation. It's that literally everything that has to do with a white person can eventually be pushed off and blamed on anybody
else. If it's negative,
exactly.
Yeah. So, on this episode, also, Alex has an interview with this guy named David Schmecker, who, is a veteran who, apparently had his guns taken away.
Oh no!
We'll get into some of the details.
Did he get his guns taken away from the government?
We'll get into some of the details, but I just have this one clip of Alex talking to him, because I think it's demonstrative of how he's framing this stuff.
Mm.
Like, it's really severe.
The cops now are having this happen who are veterans. You're going in to see the psychiatrist, and if you don't have a use for them, they're disbanding you. Keep going.
Well, I just basically was walking on eggshells all the time there, and I just wanted to get out really quick. And so I just did whatever they wanted me to do, said whatever they wanted me to say, and made that 72 hours, you know, my last 72 hours.
Oh, wait a minute. So under duress and under drugging, like you were shot down over North Korea or North Vietnam, you told them what they wanted to hear so they quit drugging you. I mean, that's like when they said they were going to drug the so-called Colorado shooter so he'd tell the truth. Sir, you were actually in a prisoner of war, Soviet-style brainwashing camp. I didn't know.
So the one of the things that I think is really interesting about that clip is that it's in there. Alex is like, keep going.
Yeah.
Like, he does that repeatedly because he will reframe everything that this guy says in very severe language and then trail off. And he's not like one of Alex's normal guests who will like yes and with him.
He's
someone who has an experience that he's trying to relate. And Alex is recontextualizing things, making them seem like way worse than they are.
Right.
He's not rolling with it, so Alex has to keep telling him, keep going.
Yeah.
And it's a very disjointed, clunky interview. But by the end of it, Alex has gotten this guy, much more into the rhythm of it.
You can
see the development through, from the beginning to the end of the interview. So what they're talking about there is apparently he got put on like a 72-hour hold, for his own safety. I'm not sure about that. I can't really find any information other than his own telling of the story.
Mm.
But I looked into this a little bit, and apparently the way that the story is told is this guy was a veteran who was honorably discharged. Then he had his guns taken away by the state in a move that presages what the globalists want to do to all the brave patriots out there in the world.
Sure.
The story is that Schmecker went to a doctor to try and get pain meds. Often when a veteran who gets their health care through the VA shows up at a doctor's office looking for pain pills, they're required to get a psych evaluation from the VA in an effort to screen out drug-seeking behaviors. Schmecker refused to get that evaluation.
Hmm.
So the doctor who referred him back to the VA for the evaluation called for a follow-up when Schmecker wasn't home. He called not intentionally, just happened to be when dude wasn't home.
Yeah.
And apparently the answering machine message that he got was enough to worry him for Schmecker's well-being. The doctor recommended a wellness check, and after that point the police showed up, and he allegedly had his guns confiscated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what to make of this story, primarily because the only information I can find on it comes directly from him. And even by his telling of the story, his actions created the situation he found himself in. This wasn't an instance of tyranny coming around. It's more a case of a guy refusing to follow the VA's guidelines who had a disturbing outbound message on his answering machine, who then acted in ways that are huge red flags to mental health care providers. Like, there's no way to say this for sure, But I have almost zero doubt that if he'd just shown up for the VA psych evaluation, it wouldn't have been, it would just been a formality. He would have been fine as long as he didn't use it as an opportunity to rant about the government trying to use psych evaluations to control the few people in society who are truly awake. If he'd just gone in, he'd have his pain medication and his guns. I'm almost certain of that.
Honestly, VA doctors are so overworked. If he had gone over on a huge rant about how the government is using psych evals, they'd be like, fine.
Maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
I'm not saying that the VA is doing a great job.
Maybe.
What I'm trying to say.
But I would say that, like, that would be a behavior that you would be looking for.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah, absolutely.
That's indicative of someone who's a bit paranoid.
Right.
Maybe has some other issues that they're dealing with. And if you didn't recognize that, you're probably failing a little bit from a mental health perspective.
Oh, yeah.
So all I see here is this dude did this to himself. Like, yeah. He just didn't follow the steps that are appropriate and required. All it is is just like, it's just something that has perfect optics for Alex to manipulate. Oh yeah. You know, you just have guns and you don't want to submit to the, see, when you go to the DA, you're going, or I'm sorry, when you go to the VA, you're going in there and it's just for them to get your guns.
Right.
So you refused to do that. So they took your guns in retaliation for not going to the VA.
Wait, what? But I thought it was there, so when I went there...
And then they had to put you in a fucking psych place and force drug you.
Well, I mean, I was acting a little bit out of control, and, you know, when the cops came, I, you know, naturally, I didn't know the cops were going to come, so I may have reacted a little bit, you know, over-aggressively, and I think that's a reasonable behavior. And then they took my guns away because, yeah, I had all those guns in there.
I don't have enough information about this situation to say this with any, like, absolute certainty. But from the pieces of information that are publicly available, it appears that this is a situation where this guy could have avoided all of this.
Yeah.
Very easily. Gotten his pain meds, gotten his, guns, retained.
Uh-huh.
No harm, no foul. His behavior is exactly the reason that things went the way they did.
And that's called tyranny, Dan.
Sure. Personal responsibility is a very high priority for the right. So Alex turns this into, like, a huge deal. Like, he turns it into, like, all guns are being taken from veterans.
Naturally.
It's happening! It really, really freaks out.
All guns are being taken away because of this one story where the guy is basically elucidating all the reasons that it's his fault.
And Alex does appeal to, like, other people he's talked to without getting into any specifics, of course.
Sure.
It's happening all over the place. This is a trend. You go to the VA, they're gonna fucking take your guns. All it is a bunch of snitches. The VA is a bunch of snitches.
Wow.
So don't fucking trust them.
Alex, the way that the healthcare system functions for our vets is bad as it is, let alone with an asshole telling you to hate and fear everyone at the VA.
Right.
That's great.
It is.
That's good work.
It's good.
That's good work.
It's gonna get worse. It's gonna get worse.
That's good work.
So Alex says, like, he has this perception of what's going on now, which is based on faulty information and misrepresentations.
Right.
But he's really worried because the present really matches the lies and misrepresentations that he's put out in the past.
Right. That's troublesome.
And the predictions that he's made based on those lies and misrepresentations
came to pass.
Yeah.
Look, I start hyperventilating and getting very, very upset when it's dawning on me that they said they'd flip Homeland Security on veterans and conservatives and libertarians and patriots and Ron Paulites and Alex Jones listeners, and I knew it was coming and people couldn't believe it. Now they're doing it, and every veteran I know has gotten a letter saying, come in and we may take your guns when you're here.
So that's just the MIAC report. He's just talking about, like, my misrepresentations of the MIAC report led me to believe X was coming. Now I'm going to misrepresent various things in order to present X is here. I was right all along based on, it's crazy. It's just so self-fulfilling. Also, at the end there, he's talking about these letters. He actually asks the guy if he got a letter. And
oh, yeah.
The guy says no.
No, he didn't get a letter?
I've never heard anybody he asks actually say, yeah, I got that letter.
I so far, all we've heard is somebody say, no, I think one of my friends got one of those letters.
Or, hey, I haven't checked the mail. Maybe it's down
there. Yeah, that's right. The guy who hasn't checked the mail yet.
Been a while.
That's a good one. Yeah, I got a P.O. box. I'll go down there and they'll take my guns there.
Yeah. So this clip is just like where he's at a little bit. And it's just so crazy how this is 6 years ago. Like, nothing changes.
This is Twilight Zone level, folks. They're trying to start a civil war. They're trying to push veterans into a shooting war that is just going to chew the police up. The globalists will sit offshore laughing. They want to cover the implosion of the economy with a civil war they engineer. Now, I want to go back to our guest.
He just, it's always the same. It never changes. There's the intensity of this is happening right now, and then nothing ever fucking happens. It's exact same shit. Alex has some advice, though, for this guest.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of funny, considering Alex's behaviors.
Yeah, you need to remove that city council and fire that police chief. You need to start a recall of the police chief. Okay, that's how you get aggressive. Okay? You need to follow the police, show them with hookers. It's called politically destroying them.
So, I mean, that's kind of stalking.
Show the police chief with hookers?
Yeah. Follow them around and take pictures of them because they're going to go find hookers, sex workers.
honey trap them?
Maybe. I mean, whatever it is, it's not healthy.
That's not good.
It's not healthy advice.
No.
But I'm more interested in the other advice because this guy, you know, the police came and took his gun. So that's why Alex is targeting the police in this whole equation.
Sure.
Because they're collaborators.
Naturally.
But like, Alex recently was at South by Southwest, and he was told he couldn't hand out his magazines.
Yes.
And he thinks that's the biggest piece of tyranny that has hit his life in a very long time.
It's huge.
And he refused to file a complaint about
it. Well, you're not going to file a complaint about it. You don't want to get this guy to overthrow city council. Yeah, you don't want to get in it.
Get the police chief fired. That's how you do
it. Listen. They're just jobbers. They're just working. They're working stiffs like you and me. You don't want to get anybody into trouble.
He wants his listeners to do it because he knows that it won't work out. It'll be a waste of time for them. Yeah. It'll hurt their personal lives, but Alex will be able to report on it, and he'll be able to create attention for himself and money for himself out of their actions.
Yeah.
He knows that's not in it for him if he reports this bullshit to the Austin police or whatever.
Yeah.
It's going to be filing a false complaint. It's going to go nowhere. Whatever the case is, it's going to be a drag on his own time and resources. So he doesn't do it. He wants you to do it so he can yell about it.
Yeah, it is an incredible con, the con of the parasite, you know, like, all of these people are like, you're our leader. And he's like, I'm just sucking off of you and draining you, your money. That's what I'm doing.
Yep.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fucking parasite. What do you want?
A racist parasite,
yeah.
As we find out, in this next clip, because, it's not a one-off thing. Like, he's really against these Mexican cartel gangs he imagines are on a rampage.
Well, I mean, we're all against them.
Well. Sure. I prefer to critique the real things they do
as opposed
to the imaginary ones.
I read a court.
Clearly, I think the evidence points towards Mexican mafia going around killing prosecutors, assistant prosecutors in Colorado, Texas. One prosecutor in Denver just took out somebody trying to kill him in his house, and they won't say who, so that means it's politically correct, probably. They want to keep the implosion going.
This is stupid.
Wow.
This is so stupid.
They don't want to say who.
Yeah. And again, this isn't stupid.
No.
This is racist being covered by stupid behavior.
Yeah.
That's what we're at. So as Alex finished that call with Schmecker, he gets into a fucked up headspace.
Right.
Because he's decided that this guy was tortured in a North Korean POW camp.
Yeah.
Alex has an epiphany that isn't an epiphany.
Oh no.
I love it when he's like, I just realized this thing I've said for years.
Folks, the globalists have my phones tapped. They follow me. They know they've got my, juvenile records. They know who I am. I mean, they know I'm for real. And they don't want to kill me because it'll turn me into a martyr, but they're trying to kill my name right now in the media. And so I need people's support as well. I mean, this is serious. And I just had a huge epiphany that we're already in a civil war. We've got authoritarians that have hijacked Washington, waging war against the Bill of Rights, the people, veterans, and the states, and demonizing us everywhere ahead of a big offensive. Do you agree with that statement?
It's you know what the feeling I get with stuff like that is? Like, I don't know if you ever experienced this, but like back when I was going to church a lot, there would be times when you'd have like small group meetings and like the youth preacher would be like, I just, you know, I had an epiphany the other day, and that is that, you know, God loves us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like that's what it's like. Yeah. This is 101 shit.
Yeah.
Alex being like, I just had an epiphany. We're already in a civil war. You scream about that all the time.
Yeah. 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 But what it is the same thing that with that youth pastor, which is like, I'm telling you this because I know I've told you before, but I actually believe it this time. This is the one time that I think I'm telling you the truth.
But I think the difference with the youth pastor, I agree with you sort of, but the youth pastor does believe it. I don't think Alex
even
believes
it. Yeah, but they don't really believe it. You know, like you don't believe it until you have an epiphany like that. And then you're like, I was kind of just going through the motions, and then you believe it and you have the epiphany and then.
Let me reframe this.
Okay.
As opposed to believe it, you viscerally felt it. That's the
yes.
What you want to talk about is not that like you had this epiphany. It's more that like you had an experience that led you to experience this in a more real way.
Yeah, as opposed to the abstract.
Alex has talked himself into feeling like this guy was in a POW camp and had his guns taken away because he's a patriot.
Yep.
And that has led him to have an epiphany of a realization that he's already had plenty of times before.
Over and over and over again. Probably the day before.
But I think there's also a utility to it. I think that Alex is, I think he's far more performative than the youth pastor, because what he's doing is he's trying to be like, this is real.
Yeah.
This is absolutely real, and you need to fucking know it. This is tyranny. It has arrived. And I think it's time, like, Alex needs to define tyranny.
I don't think he wants to do that.
So he tries.
Oh, no.
Now, I had a mega, massive epiphany during the last break. But first, I want to give you the definition of tyranny.
Yeah.
Oppressive power, every form of tyranny over the mind of man, Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, God.
The tyranny of a police state, a government in which absolute power is vested in a single ruler, especially one charismatic or an ancient Greek city-state.
What? He's trying to read just a like textbook definition.
Oh, that's what he's
doing poorly.
Yeah.
But he worked in that Jefferson quote, so now it's time for our favorite game.
Did Jefferson say it?
Well, it's really impressive, man. Alex Jones literally knows nothing about Thomas Jefferson except for little snippets of quotes he's read in militia newsletters. I will say that this one at least is a real quote, but he has no idea what the quote is about. The words Alex always repeats are, quote, I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And that sounds great, especially when you're Alex, like, rah-rahing about the New World Order and globalists.
He really wouldn't like the way Thomas Jefferson applied that to religion.
He really
wouldn't like it.
I would bet everything I own that he has no idea where that quote comes from. It's from a September 1800 letter to Benjamin Rush. And if Alex had ever read it, he would know what that letter is about. Like you said.
No, never mind.
Here's the quote in context. Quote, the clause of the Constitution, which, while it secured the freedom of press, covered also the freedom of religion, had given to the clergy a very favorite hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity through the United States. And as every sect believes its own form is the true one, everyone perhaps hoped for its own, but especially the Episcopalians and Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes, and they believe that any position of power confided to me will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe truly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the minds of man, but this is all they have to fear from me. This is a quote about swearing eternal hostility against all forms of tyranny, but specifically the ones that come from certain Christian churches that want to be the official church of the United States.
I don't know why Alex wouldn't like that.
This sentiment puts Jefferson in diametric opposition with Alex's bullshit about this being a Christian nation. And yet Alex pretends that he's the world's number one Jefferson scholar and follower of his tradition. This is getting a bit redundant and pathetic, but rest assured, I'm going to keep bringing up the myriad ways Alex knows nothing about his hero. Because it's important to reiterate over and over again that all Alex knows comes from extremist and anti-communist propaganda sources. All of the historical shit that he cites every time he drops in these quotes, they're out of context. He has no idea what they're actually talking about.
Yeah.
Even you knew that was about religious shit.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
Wait, I don't like the way you said that.
Well, I mean, even you, don't, but you don't claim to be a Jefferson scholar.
Oh,
is
yeah,
what I
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not
yeah.
that you're a dum-dum okay. or something. That did sound bad. So, Alex...
Even moron McLaugh face over yeah. here knows that one's about the religion.
So, Alex now gets back to his epiphany. Man, I mean, it's just... I can't stress how weird it is just for people to be like, I had an epiphany. Like, it would be like me coming on here being like, Jordan, I gotta tell you, last night I was taking a bath and it just dawned on me. Alex isn't cool.
No! What?
It would be very similar to that.
I can hardly breathe right now. This is so incredible. I never have anxiety, and I'm having it right now. Maybe my gun should be taken. Ladies and gentlemen,
yes!
This is so real, and it just hit me. I've been so close to the problem that we're in the Civil War now. Every TV show, drama, nonfiction, fiction, sitcoms, cop movies, you name it, every single show that is out there, every single broadcast that is out there says the gun owners are terrorists about to kill you. It's not real, but it doesn't matter. The globalists are going to stage events and push people into events and then call us the terrorist. Reality has been suspended.
There is no reality. So his epiphany, I mean, all this stuff is just exactly the same things he says all the time. They're
going to
do false flags, blame us, blah, blah, blah. Like, this isn't.
Didn't we hear that? I can't imagine that we've had a full week on this show where we have not heard him say at least one of those things.
I can't imagine that it ever has happened.
Yeah, I can't think of, but we've been doing this for 2.5 odd years. I don't think there is one week where you have not heard Alex say almost exactly that.
And if it hasn't been on our show, it's because I've not thought, like,
it's so repetitive.
It's
so,
who gives a shit?
Because it's one of those days we did a double wacky Wednesday.
Yeah. So, Alex is like the media, everybody, they're all announcing this. The Civil War is happening. I'm too close to the problem. I didn't see it. But it's not just the media, and it's not just the globalists.
Are you
it's
sure?
Everybody.
Oh, okay.
Again, folks, you go to the dentist, you go to the doctor, you go to have a baby, you go to the, I mean, now they say, oh, you had a car wreck. Why don't you go see the counselor? School counselors are now, I mean, it's all, they're all agents. They're all Stasi. God bless you. Boycott them all.
They're spies.
School counselors are all, they're all agents.
Huh? Yeah. So he takes some calls, and that's, you can hear that, God bless you. He's talking to a caller.
Yeah.
And I had to make a game time decision while preparing this episode, which wasn't an easy one. On the one hand, I always prefer to show, not tell, when it comes to how bad Alex is, but in this case, I kind of felt like doing that would be in no one's best interests. Throughout this episode, it was very clear what Alex is doing. He's trying to radicalize veterans. Pure and simple.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. Like, you can hear it through his framing of this Schmecker guy's interview. You can hear it in how he's demonizing the VA, saying all of these people are spies and Stasi. You know, he's spiraled into this ranting about how everyone's a globalist spy, and he's realized the Civil War is happening. That's performative in order to allow this escalation of rhetoric. All of it's aimed specifically at veterans, with Alex making constant arguments about how this is about how the globalists know that they need to take out military folk in order to take over everything.
Mm.
It's what all regimes do. They take out the old guard and bring in more authoritarian guard. Some of the examples he uses are kind of, I mean, yeah, but also there's more specific to it than, like, you know, like when Hitler purged Rom. It wasn't like he wasn't killing rank and file veterans.
Right.
That was
a
power grab that was aimed at the leadership, not at the base of the militia.
No, that's so, not how you maintain a leader. You don't get leadership of the militia by killing the regular guys.
No.
And then being like, hey, bosses of the militia, can I run it now?
That's sort of the frame that Alex is using, which is kind of absurd.
Yeah.
Like, he's using these historical examples of times that armed forces units have been purged like that.
Mm.
But typically, they haven't been done from the ground up.
Right.
That doesn't seem like a good strategy. But either way, that's the way he's framing it.
We're going to have a real grassroots purge here.
Yeah.
A leaderless purge existence, if you will.
So in order to prove his point, he opens up the phone lines for military folks who've had bad run-ins with the VA. And it's just Alex using these people as props. One guy calls in who claims that he had his kids taken away. But as he's telling the story, it's very clear that there's more to this story. He keeps bringing up how his family is who keeps trying to get him help, how he gets into altercations with his doctors. Like, he's clearly someone who's having a really hard time and needs help. Instead of treating the situation realistically, Alex uses this guy to prove his point that the globalists not only want your guns, they also want your kids. And then he launches into a completely disgusting diatribe about how the CPS people are having sex with your kids, and I just couldn't bring myself to include that clip. Like, we've heard him talk that way before, and it's really nothing new. At the same time, I couldn't not bring this up, because it's so indicative of what Alex is clearly doing on this episode. He's absolutely trying to radicalize these military folks in his audience by lying about everything and convincing them that people who say they want to help them, like people at the VA, like psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, they're really just globalist spies who want to take your kids and have sex with them.
Yeah.
Listening to this episode, I really don't think it's accidental. I don't think this is just how he talks sometimes. I feel like this is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely feels like he's trying to rile up mentally unstable people, turn them against anybody who could possibly help them, turn them away from professionals who could help them, and just hoping one of them does something horrific so he can claim it's a false flag. That might be a little bit out there for me to say, but it's definitely how it felt listening to this episode.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to target this group, the military veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to radicalize them through exaggerations, trying to take away any appeal to support structures.
Yeah.
And then also preemptively creating the narrative that we're in a civil war and the globalists are going to create false flags and blame them on us.
Right.
It's exactly what you would do if you wanted them to do this.
Right.
While keeping your hands clean.
Well, that's, I mean, not according to
you can prove that that's what he's doing.
Right.
But, man.
Well, according to the record, the rich dudes who wanted to perform a coup during FDR's
business plot.
Yeah, the business plot. That was essentially their same pitch. They got the guy to
Smedley.
Exactly. They basically said, "Get all the veterans together and then we'll perform a quote soft coup," and that whole thing. And it's just rile up a bunch of people who are actively trying to be helped,
but
and get them to kill their people who are helping them so you can...
That's more of a cuckoo.
Yeah.
This is cuckoo.
Ah!
Nice. This feels like inspirational stochastic terrorism to me. Like, that is what this feels like. Mm-hmm. It feels like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because there isn't an appeal to solving the actual problems that people have.
Why would you?
There
then you wouldn't have anything to yell about.
There isn't an appeal to, like, let's say, greater oversight of the Child Protective Services. There isn't an appeal
who watches
to
the watchers.
Finding a bill that you could put, introduce in order to correct
TJ's
these problems institutionally.
I don't need a bill.
those are the things that you would see probably, or you'd care more about these callers who are calling in and not use them just as ways to prop up your narratives. It seems to me very clearly he's up to no good.
Yeah.
It really felt disgusting to listen to this episode.
You have to be a psychopath to listen to somebody's story of them expressing very clear pain and all of that and turning that into, and that's why you should hate the VA.
Right.
And all those people in your family
they're
trying to get you help. They're all
your family are probably globalists.
Yeah, they're definitely globalists. They're the ones who sold you out. You can't even trust your own family now.
Yeah. So Alex has some advice to give, and it's probably not good.
We're going to run counterterrorism against them. They're all immoral. The enemy's forces are immoral. They're banging hookers, they're using drugs, they're taking money, and you just start following them. I'm telling you, these people do evil continually. You start following them, you will burn them down. And it's time, folks. The reason I get so angry is that I'm taking my energy and putting it towards things that are nonviolent. But I'm telling you, this is war. When you hand out bumper stickers, it's war. When you spread the word, it's war.
Advertise.
When you resist them, it's war. You're hammering them. Hammer them. Hammer them. Hammer them. These are the people that killed the kids at Oklahoma City.
Whoa.
Hammer them hard. Hammer them. Do you hear what I'm saying, brother?
That's right.
I mean, it's time, man. Hammer them. I'm telling you. Jack them up. Go in the bars. Record them. Check your laws in your state for one party consent. They're trying to change those so we can't. Look, they're criminals. Defeat them. We are the Republic. We are victorious. And we will live forever.
Honestly, that yelling out to break is what I say as a parody of him sometimes. We are going to live forever. What he's saying there is advocating for his audience to target and harass people.
Yeah.
Because the application of that is so nebulous. It's so vague. So the people at the VA are...
Hammer them!
They're spies and snitches.
Hammer them!
The police...
Hammer them! Who
are attachés and collaborators of the globalists.
Hammer them!
Anybody you suspect of being a globalist.
Hammer them!
Now let's say someone is in a false flag terrorism event.
Well, I mean, that was probably the Mexican cartels. But
you have to understand how this rhetoric exists in, like, okay, you know what happened to the Sandy Hook families? They got hammered.
Yeah, that does. That
you know
does
what sound... happened to these the people who are like victims of things who you cast suspicion on? They got exactly the treatment. They got followed because you're telling your audience that all of these people who are in bed with the globalists and doing all this nefarious shit, they do evil stuff all the time. So if you just follow them around and bother them, you're gonna find they do evil stuff
all the time.
This is unacceptable.
Just always be following.
This is definitively unacceptable.
No, it's, I mean, it's about to be legally actionable.
It might already be. Honestly, it might already be. He's not applying it specifically to Sandy Hook because he's still not gone full bore on that. But he has had Steve Pachenik on who has.
Yeah.
Like Alex considers him an expert and has elevated that rhetoric by giving him the platform that he has. So these things living in concert with each other are absolutely relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a mess. A mess.
Yeah.
So anyway, he started the April 3rd episode by talking about how this shape-shifting alien is a Secret Service agent that he knows.
Right.
But he didn't say
he's a good dude.
He didn't say who it was, though. But towards the end of the episode, he reveals.
This video we're going to play is viral, millions of views, of saying a Secret Service agent is an alien. And I was like, where have I seen that guy before? Because he looks striking. And he's a Sicilian. Bongino is his name. And... Sicily was invaded by Africans, so you know he's got striking African and Italian handsome features.
Whoa!
But in digitized, blown up video, you could see some of the pixels, and they say he's an alien. Now, I had remembered seeing him when he came out for the Second Amendment. I went, I've seen that striking, chiseled jaw, looks like the Thing or something from the Fantastic Four. I've seen that superhero looking face. Sure enough, I pulled it up. I found the evil alien. And let me tell you, if he's the shape-shifting alien, we need more of him.
So I know who Dan Bongino is. A lot of people do. And this supposed shape-shifting Secret Service alien guy is absolutely 100% not Dan Bongino.
Oh, no?
It looks nothing like him. Their heads are totally different shapes. Their facial features don't look anything alike. And then there's the fact that he left the Secret Service in 2011 to unsuccessfully run for a Senate seat. And that's a problem since this video of the supposed alien was shot on March 4th, 2013.
Well,
about 2 years after Bongino stopped being a Secret Service agent.
Well, he didn't win, so they gave him his job back.
That didn't happen. He ran again.
Oh, no. Unsuccessfully. Oh, no.
He ran a couple more times for Congress unsuccessfully. And since he's become a right-wing talking head, he appears on all those shows. He had a show on NRA TV. Through his career, he's been followed by criticisms from his former Secret Service agent cohorts, his former colleagues, that his brand is kind of being built on some insinuation that he has secret information from his time on the job.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a betrayal of the principles that Secret Service agents are supposed to uphold.
It's pretty much it's in the name.
Yeah.
It's in the name, man.
Yeah. Anyway, what's going on here is that Alex is trying to associate Bongino with this alien story because Bongino is an outspoken gun advocate, and Alex has to claim that all such people are under attack. The media and the globalists can't handle dealing with Bongino's actual arguments, so they just create a psyop where they accuse him of being an alien. It's all paranoid bullshit based on nothing, and it's so clear what Alex is doing at this point. He's just trying to erode the audience's trust in anything. The medical community, the VA, the media, Glenn Beck, even conspiracy theories. It's just insane how isolating Alex is being while also escalating this rhetoric around this same time period. It's very nuts. There's a very sincere feeling that he's trying to whip his audience's feelings and rage up while simultaneously making them suspicious of anyone who might be able to help them deal with things appropriately. It's just a recipe for trouble. like I've described it as trains running into each other, and you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just it's very tough to listen to. It makes me very anxious.
Yeah.
So Alex, like, he's decided this is Dan Bongino. It's
right,
not.
Even though it's demonstrably impossible for it to be so.
It's not him.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop Alex from deciding that him thinking it is the same thing as proving it.
Oh, okay.
Now, see, this is all funny. But luckily, we found out who he is. My memory did. So that's
what?
Some breaking news. We now know who the Reptoid is.
That's breaking news.
No, 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 you can't, no, you can't do that.
No.
You just can't do that. You can't just say, we found out who he is, my memory did.
Uh-huh.
That's breaking news.
We've proved it.
No,
breaking news.
No, you can't do that.
So now that Alex has proven that
no!
Dan Bongino is an alien.
No, you can't do that.
It's lazy. It's pretty sloppy.
I heard he was in the Mexican cartel, actually.
So he's proved this.
Yes.
And now he wants to get Bongino on the show to talk about it. So he offers a bounty for him to become a guest.
A what?
I want him on.
The slow disintegration of your civil rights.
$500, whoever gets him on.
Your ability to live and let live. And it's a disturbing pattern.
I paid $5,000 for the Obama
really
lady.
Starting to get under my skin.
That's not great. So he offers $500 to any of his employees who can get him the Dan Bongino interview. And he paid 10 times that much for the Obama phone lady.
Oh. I don't know. Oh. I don't know, man. I don't even know.
Yeah.
What is that? What does that mean? Does it mean anything?
Nope.
Does anything mean anything?
Nope.
What is?
Nope. It means nothing.
Oh, God.
So on the 4th, Mike Adams hosts on April 4th because Alex is working on like some studio renovations or something. I think they're expanding the studio.
Sure. So Alex has got a little tool belt.
Yeah.
He's I imagine wearing some overalls just like, I can't do the show today. I got to put up the fucking fixtures.
I imagine him with like little plastic toy tools while the adults work. And he's like, I'm helping.
I'm doing a good thing.
Yeah. So the lead story that Mike is covering is that North Korea is threatening to start a nuclear war. So they're sort
naturally.
Of like playing into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Being a little severe about it, which is kind of interesting considering the way the rest of this episode is going to play out. So we get to the 5th because who gives a fuck about Mike Adams?
Right.
And Alex, you know, he's continuing his severity about how everyone wants to take your kids. The globalists are going to kidnap your children. And here's the tone.
I mean, they're just murdering a ship. But let them find you with marijuana. That's why they want to act like marijuana is legalized, so you go and get it so they can take your kids. Marijuana is more illegal now than it's ever been. Do not smoke it. And hate the government, hate the system, spit at them spiritually. Just we are under enemy bombardment and total attack, and only a pure break with them will defeat them.
So I guess that means secession.
What is that? So
what?
So rather than smoking weed,
uh-huh.
Which is how they're going to take your guns away.
Yeah.
Because it's more illegal now in 2013 than it ever has been.
Which is pretty funny. I don't know. I mean, it's just the tone. I don't think there's anything worthwhile in that clip.
No.
It's more just the tone is like, everything is against you. We have to completely separate.
Yeah.
It's a mess. So he has some ideas about tyrants and how you make them go away.
Sure.
And he gets into that in this next clip.
There's a lot of different factions out there and there are different currents in this universe. You need to stand up for liberty and evil will vanish like tyrants at daybreak. Like mist, like phantoms at daybreak, to quote Thomas Jefferson.
Uh-oh.
Come on,
it's
man.
Time for another
just
installment
just
of our
don't
favorite
reference
segment.
Thomas Jefferson.
Some of you may have thought I was kidding when I said I wasn't going to stop correcting Alex whenever he brings up Thomas Jefferson.
Literally
if you
not going to do it.
You were wrong.
Literally not going to do
it. I will never stop because if I do, the globalists win or something.
That's true.
The quote Alex is using here is a real quote, sort of. He's at least using some of the words from a real quote that gets passed around, and the most common version of this quote is, quote, enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppression of the body and mind will vanish like evil spirits at the dawn of day. You can already tell that this doesn't really have anything to do with the context Alex is using the quote
pretty
in.
Sure. No.
For instance, when Jefferson says, enlighten the people generally, you kind of have to assume that means it has something to do with education.
Do you mean like a public education system?
And it does have something to do with education.
Oh, does it?
This line comes from a letter Jefferson sent to Pierre Samuel Dupont de Nemours, a French expat whose son would go on to found DuPont, one of the largest companies in U.S. history, and a company who's frequently cited as being a very serious polluter, an enemy of taking climate change seriously. I won't hold that against Pierre, though. He probably had no idea about how things would play out, and it was his son who started the company, but interesting trivia.
That is interesting. I'm going to hold that against Thomas Jefferson.
Go for it.
Should have killed his buddy.
So anyway, Jefferson wrote Pierre this letter in April 1816, and it's mostly about how much Jefferson likes the U.S. form of government. That's a recurring theme in his letters, though I would argue that he's a little biased on the subject. So, I don't know. This portion of that the line comes from is specifically about discussing a constitution that had been proposed in Spain, which would require all citizenship to be contingent on a person's ability to read and write, something that Jefferson speaks of positively. It was Jefferson's feeling that tyranny and all of those negative things in society and your body would just disappear if the population was educated, which is probably a very naive position, but again, it was 1816 that he wrote this in.
Yeah, those were good times, you know?
Yeah.
You just got the British back off your fucking land,
uh-huh,
kicking ass. You're like, what if we just educate people? I bet there's no problems coming over the horizon.
I mean, obviously, it's better than the alternative.
Right.
But it's not a cure-all, necessarily.
No, not necessarily.
So this has nothing to do with standing up against tyranny and them disappearing like mists in the morning. It has to do with the importance of having a literate and educated population, since the masses are where the power resides in theory, and it's absolutely crucial that the masses have the wisdom to appropriately use that power. This is about education and the importance of literacy, which, as we've learned over and over, is not one of Alex's strong suits.
Mm-mm.
There's a delicious irony that Alex is misusing a quote about literacy that he would understand if he took the time to read the things he pretends to have read.
Right.
That is just chef's kiss.
It's
just the best.
Every fucking time he mentions Thomas Jefferson, he embarrasses himself in a new way.
Exactly.
That's what's amazing.
But him not reading the quote that's specifically like about literacy and misrepresenting that is just amazing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's gotten how many quotes wrong? How many? Over how many years have we talked about how he doesn't know anything about? And yet still, somehow, he finds a new way to embarrass himself.
He's a legend.
It's incredible.
He's like Prince.
It's incredible.
Just innovating.
Just nonstop hits.
Yeah. So speaking to someone else who's really impressive, on this April 5th episode, Alex has Steve Pachenik back.
Sure.
But this narrative takes a fucking swan dive.
Okay.
At this point.
All right.
This is not about Sandy Hook.
Okay.
But it absolutely has to be related in some way. And I love this. I love this because it's something that only a crazy person brings in. Like, it's so crazy. No one else would do something like this.
All right. Let's find this out.
I've studied tyranny. It's happening next hour. I'm going to get into that. But a big surprise. He's a smart guy. He knows he's monitored. So he was smart to get out of the country and then contact us. He said, I'm going to have a surprise for you next week. I'm an expert on Korea, and I knew he was. He helped write Tom Clancy's books, co-authored them, has had a lot of his books turned into major hit motion pictures. He has multiple degrees from, what, MIT and Harvard. I don't have his bio here in front of me today. And did write the book on modern psychological warfare that was for the State Department that was picked up by the CIA and others. He's negotiated major hostage rescue operations. He's run PSYOPs. He's brought down foreign governments. That's all on record. He won't brag about it, but you can Google Dr. Steve Pachenik and find news articles about him.
Great. Great stuff. So he had a surprise for Alex, and here's what it is.
He exposes that bin Laden was already dead, other false flags. And we get his email. We called the hotel. Now he's out on the DMZ. Dr. Steve Pachenik is there with a sandstorm coming in out of the desert on the DMZ. He's watching troops coming in right now.
Steve Pachenik has gone to the DMZ to report for Alex.
That can't be real. There's no way. There's no way.
I will say his phone quality is almost always pretty bad.
Right.
And it is not diminished in any way.
Right.
This call that's coming from South Korea.
This has to be bullshit.
I don't know.
There's no way that Steve Pachenik got on a plane without telling anybody.
Right.
Went to the DM fucking Z.
Uh-huh.
And is just going to be like, and I bet Alex. Well, of course Alex is going to pick up.
Right.
All right.
Of course.
That's not a worry.
No.
That's not a worry. But come on, man. There's got to be some sense of payoff.
Well, you know, Alex is the kind of guy who's really easy to trick. And if you're trying to run a con on him, we all know that the key is to butter him up a little bit. Ugh. And here is how Steve presents his trip to Korea.
But I've had the opportunity and the unique one. And the reason I've done this to really be able to co-op and to explain to the Americans through only through the Alex Jones Show, and Alex and I are being paid. This goes back to our friendship and to the belief I have in that he's the only media that I can get the real truth. And as I'm seeing it now.
So Alex is the only real media. So I had to go to Korea in order to make sure that the real truth gets out.
God, if he's just on vacation, mm-hmm. if he just went on vacation to South Korea and his wife was literally just like, oh my God, do you realize what we could do right now? And Steve is like, I'm way ahead of you. He's got his cell phone out and he's got this long fucking wire coming out.
I imagine more her rolling her eyes like, again, yeah. Steve, leave Alex alone.
I want her to be a joyful conspirator and fucking over Alex.
I have literally no idea if Steve was actually in Korea or not, but I have a strong sense he was not. Mostly because I have a strong sense that he is a huge liar.
Yeah. Of course.
In order to see what I could find, I went and checked out Steve's blog, since he was writing articles on it back then.
Yeah.
As it turns out, on April 1st, he posted about Sandy Hook being a false flag. Then he made another post about how he was going to be on Alex's show that day. Then there's a gap. On April 4th, he returns, claiming that he'd headed out to the DMZ to sniff out what he suspected was large-scale psych warfare. In his article, he claims that, quote, I was in South Korea as it transitioned from a military leadership to civilian political system.
Mm.
And later in this episode, when he's talking to Alex, he's going to claim more or less responsibility for saving South Korea. So everyone there knows
him.
So hold on. Yeah.
Hold on. So he's saying he was in South Korea at the end of the Korean.
Well, he's unclear about it because there was that transition in 1948, which he would have been 5 years old.
Right, probably not that one.
Then there was a transition in 1987, but I have no evidence that he was actually there at all.
Yeah.
Or working for any kind of government entity at the time. That evidence is absent.
All right, okay.
I have no fucking idea.
I'm going to assume he won the Korean War single-handed.
Probably, when he was five.
Sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess he could have been in the country, like, in the 80s as a tourist. But as any kind of a player in any situation, it just doesn't make sense. And his claim that he was there and in the mix follows his consistent pattern of taking credit for everything that's ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The evidence that accompanies his post is three pictures of what is allegedly Steve posing in tourist spots in Korea.
Oh, no.
I say allegedly because at this point, in 2013, Steve was still refusing to reveal himself publicly. So he'd blurred out his face in these pictures. It might not even be him. Might just be someone's tourist pictures with a blurred face.
You?
Could be.
Good God.
The pictures aren't dated. They don't show anything that couldn't actually just be a retired guy visiting South Korea to see the sights, which are now being recontextualized as proof that he's there to sniff out psyops.
Oh, my God.
On April 5th, Steve posted a picture of himself with a group of Koreans in fatigues, which, again, could easily be achieved by a tourist who just ran into a group of soldiers on leisure time. That said, his analysis is fairly decent. He's saying that North Korea knows that attacking South Korea would mean at the end of any real military or political existence for both the North and the South, so it's incredibly unlikely. He just seems to be mad at media outlets who are escalating the story and hyping up the possibility of a strike from North Korea, which is weird, because that's exactly what Alex has been doing on his show.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a reasonable thing to be mad at.
Yeah, he seems to be against that, and the analysis of it isn't escalationist, it isn't sensational.
No, it seems pretty clear-eyed, actually.
His involvement seems to be deceitful.
Bananas!
But the end thing that he seems to be advocating for, I'm not really against.
Yeah, 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 that's weird. You know, it's like that Jacob Wool, you know how he had that thing where he's claiming to be in all different places on Instagram?
Right.
And he was just doing that to be a piece of shit. But what if he was doing that to give clear-eyed foreign policy advice? Maybe we'd feel a little differently.
But you see, about that clear-eyed foreign policy analysis, that's not analysis that anyone needs to go to Korea to have.
No, you don't.
It's exactly the kind of thing you'd know if you were just reasonably informed. Or maybe if you were a habitual reader of publications put out by the intelligence company Stratfor, which we know Steve is.
Yeah, that could be.
As his trip goes on, he offers no evidence of anything, he's saying, other than more tourist photos, which I find weird. He also complains on April 7th that he's being denied access to the U.S. Embassy, any military base, and any other official areas, which is unacceptable because he claims he's a former, quote, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia. This is a new title that I've never seen him have in any other article or any document. In every other source, he's had the title of Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Management, which is in a completely different wing of the State Department organizational chart from this new title that he's giving himself. Also, if that was his position, I think you would know that it's actually called the Deputy Assistant Secretary of East Asian and Pacific Affairs.
No.
But that's a slight squibble.
That's, man.
Legitimately, this would be an entirely separate career from anything he's claimed to have in the past.
Yeah.
There is zero chance he was ever the Deputy Assistant Secretary for East Asia. That's just not possible.
Yeah.
Until there's more proof of this. There's no way I can really even believe Steve was in Korea.
Off. He wasn't in Korea.
The evidence is tourist pictures. And analysis that anyone could have if they just read some shit.
And that he blurred the pictures. He blurred the face of the picture.
But to be fair, that is what he was doing at the time. Like,
of course.
The only picture that was available of him was like from the 70s. He wanted his anonymity, and I kind of understand that.
Eh.
Like, it makes sense if he's legit. And it also makes sense if he's scamming.
It makes even more sense if he's scamming.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think that very act of trying to maintain your privacy, I don't think that that's damning, although it does make it much more difficult for you to use tourist pictures as evidence of you being on a clandestine mission to South Korea in order to tell Alex the truth.
And yet it makes it almost infinitely easier to claim that you were in South Korea and steal some photographs.
Oh, you bet.
Hmm.
Now, unfortunately, while he's giving his analysis that the media is overhyping this and all that stuff, he says some things that are real problems and actually make his timeline.
North Korea was a false flag in general.
No.
Okay.
But they make his timeline even more impossible. Like we discussed in the episode all about Steve.
Yeah.
We didn't know other things that he brings up on this episode that make his timeline literally impossible.
Okay.
When I was drafted, I was 24, 25. What Alex was telling
impossible.
You, these young kids have mandatory 2-year service in the Republic of Korea.
So, look, there's just no way that Steve's story makes any
impossible.
Sense. He claims he made the rank of 06 at age 32, which would be pretty much unbelievable, even if he joined the services on his 18th birthday. Now he's saying he was drafted at 24 or 25 years of age, meaning that he's claiming he reached 06 in a maximum of 8 years, which is just not even close to possible.
Yep.
After our last episode about Steve, I got some messages from enlisted persons and veterans, and their perspective was very consistent. They said there is no way Steve could have reached 06 by 32. It's just an insane thing to claim. Now he's even shortening that time frame even further, which just makes it even more impossible for me to believe is something he could have done. Beyond that, at the time he was drafted, if my math is correct, he should have been in medical school. So I'm not quite sure how that timeline works. You could get out of draft.
No, he was drafted while he was doing his residency as well. And simultaneously, he was getting a PhD from MIT, I believe?
No, that was after his 06.
Oh, okay.
Apparently.
Well, then I guess it's still possible.
This timeline makes absolutely no sense.
No,
and
it's all along.
I generally try to come from a position of believing people about their credentials.
Like, I know.
Yeah, especially about military stuff, because it's really serious to, like, impugn someone's service.
Right.
Like, I think
it's
really disrespectful.
Which is also
and
why
I'm
it's
not
really
doing
disrespectful
that.
To claim to have
right.
that service.
I'm not doing that.
Exactly.
But I'm saying that this timeline is screwy.
Yeah.
There's something that doesn't make sense about this. And I would like clarification for it because I don't want to be forced to call someone's service into question.
Right.
And I'm rapidly being pushed down that road.
Dan, I am going to take care of this for you. I am not going to force you whatsoever. I am going to question his service on my own, of my own volition.
The views of Jordan do not necessarily reflect.
Pachanik, you're full of shit!
I'll join you on the full of shit.
You're lying!
This is crazy. It's absolutely nuts. So, on this episode, Alex then, after getting done with talking to Steve about his Korea report, which is innocuous for the most part, except for these, like, points of bullshit.
Yeah.
Alex talks to two pastors, Chuck Baldwin, extremist pastor Chuck Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
and a guy named Greg Dixon. For the most part, it's just about, it's so boring. It's an interview about how the globalists are taking over the church, and it's a dumb fucking interview because their argument seems to just boil down to the fact that churches are 501c3 and that's made them puppets of the state. And my answer to that is very simple. Pay your fucking taxes.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Churches don't have to be a 501c3 organization. The only reason they do it is to make themselves tax exempt. If you don't want the requirements that exist with 501c3 entities, cool. Pay your taxes. Then you can do whatever you want. And I don't care. I don't care about this. But
that's what a lot of churches said, and now they're tools of the state. Did you ever consider that, Dan?
I thought about it.
Yeah.
But see, the point about this too, though, is that this interview is so goddamn boring, and it's just about the globalists trying to take over all the churches and all that shit. In the same way that on the 3rd, Alex was targeting these veterans with this extremist radicalizing rhetoric, he's now doing that to the Christians, or to, you know, his version of Christian. He's saying that the globalists are an existential threat to the church. They're going to take out everybody's church, and you've got to. It's the exact same thing. He's isolating a group and using whatever hardship they may be experiencing as a prop and a pedestal upon which to promote his narratives and radicalize.
Right.
It's intentional.
It's like he's doing those themed episodes of fucking Maury. Yep. Where a week before he's like, are you a Christian who has been wronged by this? Blah? Next week we're going to do an episode where we try and radicalize all of you.
Well, it would be that if Maury's goal was to overthrow the government.
I think Maury's goal was to overthrow
the government.
I watched
plenty of Maury. He's fine with the government.
All right.
So beyond that, Alex just says some stupid fucking shit in this episode. This is one of my favorite.
This country, you know, my dad's family goes back to the Mayflower. This is very rare, by the way. It's 200 plus thousand Americans who are living had somebody on the Mayflower. My mother had two people on the Mayflower. Forget his name, the barrel maker and the famous woman. They got married. The lowest guy on the totem pole was the barrel maker. They got married. That's my ancestors. And then my dad's side, kind of a scoundrel of a guy, but the captain of the Mayflower.
Oh, wow. You have a lot of family on the Mayflower.
Oh, my God.
So I have a strong theory that Alex is trying to tie his lineage back to the Mayflower because it was the first pilgrims that came over, and because Alex ascribes to this Christian identity belief, the first pilgrims that came over were actually Israelites.
Yeah.
And they found the promised land.
Yeah.
So his being the descendant of the, like, yep, on both sides of his family from the original, it makes him the purest of all.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's a chosen one in some ways. I really believe that that's the rhetoric or the point behind the rhetoric.
Yeah. No, I was like, there's no, when he started saying, oh, my dad's family, I was like, whatever. But when he had both of his parents on there, it clicked the British Israelism stuff.
Yeah.
That finally, that clicked right there.
It,
I was like,
it really,
oh, means, you genuinely think that you're one of the fucking 144,000 or whatever it is.
It definitely feels
like
that's what's behind this.
Yeah.
So the Mayflower arrived in America on November 9th, 1620. And it's pretty amazing that Alex is trying to claim that both his family sides trace back to people on that boat, considering there were only about 130 people on board, and that was about 400 years ago.
Yeah, but the captain.
Right.
Captain was a bit of a cad.
The odds are staggeringly against this. But if it were true, somehow this bit of lineage would give Alex the veneer of being true American royalty.
And he's Confederate royalty. This dude should be running both countries.
His blood's been in this country from day one.
Except for when it was out of this country for roughly 4 years.
And he'll be goddamned if anyone tries to impugn his connection to this great country.
Except if they are talking about that period of 4 years where he was not part of that country.
Let's leave his mother's side of the family out of the equation for a minute. It's a little bit difficult to sort out since maiden names get complicated and he's just saying his mom's side goes back to the barrel maker and famous lady.
Well, remember the barrel maker? Girl and famous lady?
I know who he's talking about, but those descriptions I would say are imprecise. However, on his dad's side, he says the line goes back to the captain, and that's something I can definitely look into. Alex is making this claim because the captain of the Mayflower is named Christopher Jones, and thus they must be related.
That's it? That's the whole fucking, God damn it, I hate these people so much. I hate them so much.
It makes sense when you think about it. This captain heroically brought the pilgrims to the new world, then made a home here where his ancestors became intertwined with the growth of this land from the very start.
It's like if your last name is Lee and you're like, well, clearly I started China also.
Also, there's a huge hole in this story. There's a lot of information about Christopher Jones, and one of the things that no one disputes is that he was bringing the pilgrims to America because they paid him to. He had nothing to do with their mission, you could say that these people were on. He was doing a job, and his family, including his 8 children, didn't come along. His wife, Josie and Clark, stayed behind in their hometown of Harwich in England. After delivering the pilgrims across the Atlantic Ocean, Christopher Jones returned to England and lived out the rest of his life there, which was not long, because he died in 1622. He didn't stay in America, and he's not one of the founding members of this country, and it's very unlikely that he's actually related to Alex. I think it's just thought that because his last name is Jones, which is amazingly dumb.
That's how a child views the world.
Right.
That is how a toddler fucking views the world. Oh my God. That's fucking annoying. That's so annoying. My last name's Holmes. When I was growing up, people were like, are you related to John Holmes?
H.H. Holmes.
Porn star John Holmes or H.H. Holmes, the guy who
Larry
murdered
Holmes.
All those people? Larry Holmes, Larry Flint, like whatever. Like, fuck off! Stupid. That's so stupid.
I had very little with Friesen. That was so rare.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
Yeah.
If the captain of the Mayflower was literally Dan Friesen, maybe we could have a deeper conversation.
I don't think it would be likely, though.
No.
Even in that case.
No.
But, I mean, like, I do have a lot of, like, distant, weird relatives among, like, Mennonite communities. Because they are, like, Friesen is a fairly common, reasonably common name among Mennonites.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are some weird, distant relatives named Friesen. I found a few that were kind of strange. But don't mean anything.
That's
certainly
interesting. Yeah.
I don't believe that Alex is related to the people who were on the Mayflower, because this is an area that people have studied intensely. The family trees of these people, the original white people who landed in North America, is pretty well researched, and none of the resources I can find indicate in any way that Alex has descendants among the pilgrims. But you know who does? Star of many Fast and Furious movies, as well as Debs, Jordana Brewster!
Jordana Brewster can trace her line back from the Mayflower?
How about noted chanteuse Avril Lavigne?
She can trace it all the way
back? She's Canadian.
She's Canadian. She's not even from here.
Or what do you think about folk singer and political gadfly Pete Seeger?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Is that not manly enough for you?
Not really.
How about 16-time WWE World Champion John Cena?
Cena's from the Mayflower?
He's got relatives that go
no
back.
Oh shit.
The champ is here.
All right.
Your time is up. My time is now. All that's what the pilgrims said when they landed.
Okay, that is, but that's not what we want to say anymore.
You know what they said to King George? You can't see me.
For the listener at home, he is doing the hand gesture that John Cena.
You
applies.
Know what they said at Lexington and Concord?
What
I'm
else
a bad,
got?
Bad man.
What else we got? What else we got?
I don't have any more references to his songs. He gave England the five-knuckle shuffle.
Yeah, okay.
And the STFU.
All right.
All of these people have documented relatives who are among the pilgrims. Whereas Alex, all he can say is that he's related to the barrel maker and famous lady. It's weak stuff. And make no mistake, this list is not some politically biased list that would ignore dumb conservatives who have pilgrim ancestry. I know this because the list also includes Sarah Palin. Like, Alex is no different than Sarah Palin in terms of public disgust.
Yeah. For sure.
If she's on there, he would be on there. The thing you have to consider is that the pilgrims were very much unprepared for what they found when they arrived. 45 of the 108 passengers on that ship died in the first winter, with 10 more dying within the first year from when they landed. On top of that, 8 of them returned to England, just saying, fuck this noise. The people Alex is claiming were on his mother's side were John Alden, who was the barrel maker, and Priscilla Mullins, who I guess is the famous lady. I'm not entirely sure what that's a reference to.
I don't know.
Alden was a hired hand on the ship, but he did decide to stay in North America as opposed to returning with Christopher Jones when he went back. He married Mullins, but if Alex is related to them, it has to be a direct descent, because Mullins' entire family died in that first winter. There are gigantic databases of John Alden's descendants, because, spoiler alert, that dude liked to have kids.
Okay.
Alex's mom is named Carol Jones, and there are actually a number of Carol Joneses listed as descendants of Alden. Or at least there are a few Caroline Joneses, which is close enough.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, all of them were born in the early 1800s, so I doubt they're Alex's mom.
All right. We are our ancestors, Dan.
Right. Plus, it couldn't be her anyway, because her maiden name is Carol Hammond. And there are tons and tons of surnames listed in the database of the Alden family tree, and Hammond doesn't exist once.
Jesus.
It's not one of the names that's included as part of the genetic lineage, or the, I guess, not genetic, but...
God.
What would you call that? Just the family tree lineage,
yeah,
whatever.
Why not? Yeah. Lineage. Lineage is fine.
Sure.
Ancestry.
Hilariously, while looking into this, I found a post on Yahoo Answers. Someone asked a question. It was posted like a day after this episode that we're going over here.
No, come on.
It asks, quote, why does Alex Jones forget details about his family history on the Mayflower? Is he making this stuff up?
You did not find that.
I did.
Fuck you.
To answer that Yahoo post from 6 years ago,
yes. Yes, emphatically.
He's very likely making this stuff up. Because by incorporating it into his mythology, he gets to feel like he has a greater claim on being a true American, which is sad, since being an opportunistic con man is all he really needs to make him as American as apple pie.
I was going to say, yeah, it really, I think people who on the Mayflower are far less patriotic and American than people scamming other Americans.
It's amazing.
That's like our number one thing.
Totally.
That's what we do.
Totally. And I can't stress this enough. Like, people who have, families that go back to the Mayflower and know about it, they document it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very common thing that people have, like, certificates, and, like, they're involved in organizations. They might even know a bunch of other descendants.
Right, groups
that get together.
Right.
And, like, it clubs. If for Alex to claim that his family goes back to the Mayflower and him care so much about these sorts of ideas and these things and not know the names of the people. Just the barrel maker and the famous lady.
Yeah, the barrel maker and the famous lady.
Unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable.
The barrel maker and the famous
lady. If Alex was truly related back to people who were on the Mayflower, he would know their name. He would know so much about them, not forget their name. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean,
it's not true.
Look, it's true. And everybody in his family, like, it's important, but they don't really get together about those Mayflower people. They're more into the Confederate royalty side of the thing.
I think some of that actually is true, though.
I think that's the thing. I think that is true.
Also, the captain went back to England.
I know. That's pretty hilarious.
And his name was just Jones.
He had no idea. He has no idea the captain went back to England.
It doesn't seem like it.
He just doesn't know.
It doesn't. He might, but it really doesn't feel like he knows.
He assumed that the only way the pilgrims would get there is if one of the pilgrims was a captain.
And had a ship.
He didn't realize that you could just buy a ship.
Yeah. Hire a guy.
Yeah.
So he gets, he's saying that in the context of this interview with Baldwin and Greg Dixon. And again, I can't stress enough. It's one of the most boring things that is also meant to stir up the religious. I just have this little clip. It's kind of indicative. It's Greg Dixon talking about they're trying to wipe out the church.
The goal of the United Nations is to eliminate every local church on earth. To eliminate every local church on earth. Now that's what this whole issue of Islam is about right now. They're using Islam now to destroy Christianity, and then they'll turn around after they get through with that. Then they will destroy Islam. But right now they're using Islam to destroy Christianity.
You can hear that. Alex says exactly.
That is a parody of what I would do if I were making fun of a weird old pastor. I would just say that and be like,
it seems like
isn't that crazy?
Character.
Yeah.
Like Crank Yankers is coming back. I just saw someone post on Twitter.
No, it's not coming back.
And I'm
back.
Like, that sounds like a fucking Crank Yanker
that
character.
That really does sound bullshit.
Yeah, it does. But this is a real guy, and like, this is the tenor of what they're talking about. The UN is making moves now to wipe out literally all churches. You won't have control. Like, and Islam is being used to do it.
Right,
you're going to be taken over by Islam, and then they're going to crush Islam.
Once Islam takes over, then they're going to use the Shintoists to crush Islam. And then when the Shintoists take over, they're going to use the animists. Do they still exist? Are people of probably witches or something? I don't know. I'm very sleepy.
What's going on is day by day, there is a pageant going on Alex's show that is designed in order to alienate and radicalize segments of his audience. There was the segment on one day about veterans. There's now this segment on this episode about the church, and it's upsetting.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do this unless you were trying to do something.
It's almost like a scheduled bit on the show, like the old Daily Show.
But I see it intensifying. It's not something that has been as overt.
Right.
In the past. It's something that is scaling, in this beginning of April, which is very troubling. So we get to the seventh, and I keep this clip in just because, like, I always talk about how bad Alex is at his job, and, like, this, there's no greater indication than how he begins on the seventh.
We should get a LexisNexis subscription. I had a Thomson Reuters subscription about 6-7 years ago, but I never used it, so I got rid of it. Guys, on Monday, get a Thomson Reuters subscription and a LexisNexis. Google's great, but you can't find stuff.
What the fuck is going on?
Is this... This is on the show. This isn't like some hidden camera video or anything. This is him on the show saying, "Hey guys, let's do the bare minimum to find."
Hey guys,
you.
We need research tools. We should have had that a long time ago, probably. Now, granted, I had a subscription to Reuters and I never used it. What the fuck are you doing? That's crazy.
That's so funny.
It shows, like, what are you researching? You're just reading shit on Drudge
Report. They're just Googling it.
Whenever you talk about this hard work that you do, and, like, I spend hours getting into the nitty-gritty.
I Googled a couple
you're
things.
Just reading fucking WorldNet Daily.
Just Googled
all
a couple things. See what's up.
So on the 7th, Alex spends most of this show talking about Melissa Harris-Perry.
Okay.
Because that video has just been released. Mm-hmm. If you'll recall, it was the woman on MSNBC who put out the video where she talked about how we have, for a long time, we've looked at kids as being just the responsibility of their parents, but we need to take a more communal approach and not look at it as children belonging to their parents, but belonging to the community.
Which everybody sat with, thought about, and realized was a fairly reasonable position.
Holy shit.
It was a little bit, you know, it was like, well, this isn't how we normally view the family, but I can see where she's coming from, and we live in an interconnected society now in a way that... No,
it's
how
proof,
do people...
It's proof that they want to take your kids.
That's what it was. That's right. I forgot. I thought people reacted to it reasonably.
Nope.
Now, let's go ahead and go to this clip. MSNBC host, your kids belong to the collective. This article is up at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com right now, linked in red.
He's stealing that red link from Drudge. So you've talked about this narrative before when Alex has brought it up, when he encountered it. It's the one where, you know, she did this commercial that said the children don't just belong to their parents, they belong to the larger community. And it's really obvious from surrounding context that she meant the word belong in relation to the community. In its definition, that means being a part of. But that didn't stop literally all of the right-wing media from freaking out and screaming about creeping communism. Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, and Glenn Beck all made sport out of yelling about this shit, and Alex is no different. He spends almost, I would say, most of this episode talking about this clip and how it proves exactly what he said about the globalists, they just want your kids. Harris Perry responded to the backlash in a blog saying, quote, "Those of you who are alarmed by this ad can relax. I have no designs on taking your children. Please keep your kids. I venture to say that anyone and everyone should know full well that my message in that ad was a call to see ourselves as connected to a larger whole. I don't want your kids, but I want them to live in safe neighborhoods. I want them to learn in enriching and dynamic classrooms. I want them to be healthy and well and free from fear." What she meant was totally clear in that ad itself, and her response attempted to clarify that further, but it didn't matter.
It never does.
This means nothing. But there's another funny irony here. On this episode, Alex just keeps going on and on about how the Nazis and Soviets want your kids, and this is proof of that. He kind of forgets how that was also, like, Jesus's big thing.
What?
Bring the kids to me.
Nah, I don't remember Jesus saying anything like that.
It's weird.
It's no.
There was a weird thought that dawned on me.
No. I just had an epiphany, Dan. I don't think that Alex is arguing a lot of this in, like, good faith. I don't think he's thinking through all of it.
See, this
I'm starting to think that this guy is just throwing shit at the wall, and he doesn't really care if it fits within a larger ideology.
But I don't know if it's throwing shit at the wall, because that has such a connotation of randomness.
Oh, no, I mean, like, whatever, in that kind of reactionary way.
Right.
Of just like, oh, well, she said something, so I'm going to say something.
Right.
You know, whatever it is she says, I'm going to say the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. It's just there's feelings of intention behind stuff that I'm having a tough time getting away from.
I mean there's an intention that is always there, which is that of just like complete and utter opposition and a willingness to twist
opposition
and distort,
to progress,
a willingness to twist and distort anything into something that might fit within the narrative. Mm-hmm. So you can't divorce, you know, you can't say that what he's saying is stupid, But there is absolutely evil intent behind it.
Right.
That's all built in there from the beginning. It, you know, he wouldn't even have the opportunity to say something that stupid.
Yeah.
Were the evil intent not already there.
So, Alex talks about this Melissa Harris-Perry clip for most of the show. Mm. But thankfully, there's another segment on this show. And it's a returning segment.
We got a frontline report from North Korea with the guy that did the Camp David Accords, the top psychiatrist, the Harvard psychiatrist, the guy that co-wrote Tom Clancy's books, very famous living psych warfare specialist, probably one of the biggest out there, overthrown countries, you name it.
Steve Pachanik is back on with another fucking North Korea.
Still in North Korea.
So now what's interesting about this is Steve is really insinuating himself into the show.
Yeah.
He's coming on very regularly.
Yeah.
And the way he's coming on is as an expert. Alex is presenting him with all of these huge credentials. Mm-hmm. And he's gone to South Korea because he helped establish the democracy there.
Sure.
He's so deeply credible and so relevant that he's going there and he's telling Alex consistently, I went so I could give only you the real truth.
Right.
When you present him like that, it's really hard to not believe everything he says.
Yeah.
So when he starts saying that Sandy Hook is actors, which he already has, it really is tough to disconnect that from the credibility that you're giving him by having him on constantly to talk about North Korea.
Yeah.
It's a setup for real trouble.
It is kind of interesting that out of all of this, I haven't heard anything about Alex blaming Steve Pachanik for anything. Nothing.
Mm-mm.
When it
he like, blames like Wolfgang Halbig.
Yeah.
He blames Tracy, but not
like
Steve.
When you go through their interactions, like there's no other way to look at it other than a man really fucking with Alex.
If
like,
you don't,
whether it's maliciously or not, whether it's like beneficently or not. He is fucking with Alex's head, man.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He is in Alex's head. He's not in Korea, but by saying that he's in Korea and saying that he's doing this all for Alex, Alex is like, I will believe literally anything you say. You went to South Korea and didn't tell me?
And on your own dime?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You did that to be a field reporter for me?
And I didn't even do anything? He didn't go!
Yeah. If he didn't go, you have to look at this as an intentional effort in order to make himself a fixture on Alex's show.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. This was a Hail Mary if he didn't go.
It's crazy. If he did go, it's even crazier. I don't know what's going on.
But if he went on vacation and just was like, I can kill two birds with this one stone.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Crafty.
Then. Yeah. Yeah, that's clever.
So he's just teasing that Steve's going to be coming up. So he gets back to complaining about the Melissa Harris-Perry clip. And what do you know?
You heard the MSNBC hoax. Been part of the Department of Education saying the collective owns your children like this is North Korea. No, they don't. Fight back and these tyrants will dissipate like phantoms at dawn, to quote Thomas Jefferson. Okay.
Fight back.
So it's the same Thomas Jefferson quote.
Right,
again.
But he's got it.
I know we already discussed that misused quote earlier, but I have to bring it up again because it's just fucking hilarious to me that the quote is again, like I have to stress, it's about the need for education. And here Alex is engaged in a targeted demonization campaign against someone who's just trying to encourage greater communal responsibility for the education of children. If he knew what he was doing, I would say that this must be satire. But as it is, he's just an idiot who's memorized a couple quotes and thinks he knows what he's talking about. Like, he's using a Thomas Jefferson quote about the importance of education to attack someone who's talking about the importance of education.
Yes.
Great.
Yes, and he's using it in such a way as to change its original meaning to, like, not, we should all educate ourselves and tyranny will go away.
Uh-huh.
But, fight. I don't know, punch tyranny in the face and it'll go away. You know what I'm saying? Get it.
Also, Melissa Harris-Perry has nothing to do with the Department of Education. She's a political science professor, author, and had a show on NBC. But it's important for Alex to present it as if she's an official in that, because it needs to be officially Obama's attempt to take over the schools. So who gives a shit about facts? Right. The optics.
And she's not an official, but that's only because Obama wants her in the media to get you used to the idea that, and so really she's an official anyways.
Right.
If she's not an official, she's an official.
Right.
She's an unofficial official.
So Alex gets to talk
officially
to Steve, and Steve tells him about what's going on in Korea. And again, it's not sensational. Or, you know, his analysis is not like, when he gets down to talking about the situation, it's very much like, okay, well, I don't know if I agree with him that North Korea is completely controlled by China. Right. I don't know if I agree with him on that front.
Right.
But anything that's prescriptive is all just about, like, we need to calm down about this.
No
harm, no foul on that. Now, he also says something that is absolute bullshit.
30 years ago, I was part of really developing the special forces units out of Fort Bragg into an elite Delta Force unit and talking to them.
Sure. In fact, you were involved, and that's on record, in the creation of Delta Force, in 1979?
What?
That's correct.
So Steve created Delta Force.
So Steve also created Delta Force?
Yeah.
I'm getting hints of Zagami running down 9/11. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, are you? So Steve Pachanik, by his own admission, quit the State Department in 1979 because he was involved in the Iranian hostage crisis.
And that's when he started Delta Force.
To be fair, that crisis kicked off in November, so he might have created Delta Force before the hostages were taken, and then he quit. But you got to assume, if the government trusts this guy to start Delta Force, they'd definitely call him for that hostage crisis. Something just doesn't make sense here.
Oh!
Steve knows that he can make up whatever he wants about Delta Force because it's a super secret unit that's really easy to lie about. Unfortunately for Steve, the Army released a bunch of documents to reveal for the first time how Delta Force was created, and it does not match his story. The initial plans were formulated after the bombing at the Munich Olympics in 1972. By 1978, there were already at least 150 enlisted men in Delta Force, so the timeline of him creating it in 1979 makes absolutely no sense. Delta Force was officially created in 1977 by Army Colonel Charles Beckwith, and Steve's name is literally nowhere to be found in any of the information I can find. I mean this sincerely. If this isn't true, this claim is an outrageously disrespectful act. I'm not the type to go over the top about the troops or any of that stuff, but this sort of thing even kind of offends me. I don't believe Steve, and unless he can prove what he's saying, particularly about founding Delta Force, this is the sort of thing that only a sociopath would do. This is outrageous.
No, this dude's fucking insane.
I'm starting to come to a conclusion that Steve might be severely mentally ill.
No, you I've never actually listened
high
to him.
High functioning, but severely mentally ill.
Oh, no. After we did that episode, here's how on the show, and maybe I'm ridiculous and everybody else saw this, like little Easter eggs that tell you the end of Lost or whatever, but like, Steve Pachanik has always been presented as a cranky, intelligent, and manipulative dude.
Can I say that I still agree with those three characterizations?
I agree with those three as well. But then after you gave me the whole claims on his bio, I'm like, okay, now this guy might be out for fun too. Like this might just be a guy who's like, I'm bored.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not
100%
against that assessment either.
But now you add this Korea shit? When he doesn't need to be there, he doesn't need to call Alex, he has no obligations whatsoever to do anything even in the docket of what we're being talked about, this dude's fucking insane. He's crazy.
It really feels like
he is out of his mind.
Yeah. And a part of it, just because I'm very detached from all this, and like I'm looking at it, especially I'm looking at the past here too, like, there is a part of it that I kind of appreciate it, even if he's that crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's so weird. It's so outside the norm that of looking at this, like, I don't want to fucking talk about Chuck Baldwin. I don't want to talk about this. But Steve, seeing he created Delta Force, democratized South Korea, like, all this stuff, like, wow. That's an interesting swing. Why are you doing that?
The guy like Zagami and those guys, the guys who suddenly have this like weird additive Forrest Gump lifestyle.
That's exactly
like,
how I was looking at Steve.
Yeah,
it's like he's fancying himself this weird Forrest Gump guy.
And then, but if you throw something in there, he'll be like, "Yeah, I'll just include that in the movie." Like these guys are watching Forrest Gump and then just throwing in little bits over and over and over again until you have a lifetime long Forrest Gump movie.
So, Steve, he has some interesting framing about why he went to Korea.
Okay, let's hear this.
Which again,
let's hear this. I want to hear
I'm
this.
I'm not sure I believe, but this framing is interesting.
The day I finished my interview with you, which you were so grateful about on Sandy Hook, where I told you it was a false flag, I knew that Obama and his White House choir boys would start another false flag in Korea. I could see it. I could smell it. So I got on the plane the next day without anybody's permission. I was told not not to go. I came here and I wanted to report directly to you and the American public, went on to the DMZ zone in other parts of North Korea, which I cannot describe because of the past experience.
So he knew that because he'd blown the case wide open with telling Alex that Sandy Hook didn't happen and they were actors, that Obama was going to hear his appearance on Alex's show and he's going to have to shift gears and start a false flag in South Korea, in North Korea. So he went over there to get to the bottom of it at a time. This guy is crazy.
That is deeply conspiratorial thinking.
It's, yeah.
That's the type of thinking that has people, taken to a very lovely place and told to have a seat.
That's the type of thinking.
Someone will be seeing you soon.
A psych evaluation.
Somebody's gun should be taken away, is all I'm saying.
Well, he does say later that he's packing, so that's good.
Of course.
Alex is not. He takes a different approach to this than you and I do.
which would be, you're full of shit, Steve. Tell me what you're actually doing.
He goes the other direction and says, Steve, you're amazing. This is so great. I got to have you back on tomorrow.
That doesn't sound right.
Doctor, I want you to get some sleep. We're back on the radio tomorrow. How long are you in Korea?
I will be here a few more days to serve you and our American public.
All right, well, let's get you set up. We're going to get you set up for a report tomorrow sometime during the three-hour show. Chris, pick 30 minutes to do it. All right, thank you so much, Dr. Pachinik.
Thank you, Alex, and thank you, America. But I want everybody to understand Alex is not a conspiratorial individual. I don't think there's anybody in the mass media who really understands Plato and Zarathustra as well as Alex does.
All right,
we're not going to have the Gooderdamaran quite yet, my friend.
Oh.
I hope not.
So that's kind of in relation to earlier in the episode, Alex got, like, he was spinning his wheels about someone critiquing him for bringing up Plato's allegory of the cave, because also in the Republic, Plato encourages philosopher kings, and that's against democracy. Or Alex screams about how, I could use a metaphor, and I don't have to support everything Plato did.
Right.
Like, all right, whatever.
I don't have to support everything Plato.
Well, then why does Obama have to support everything the Islamists do?
So Steve is bringing that up to flatter Alex.
In a
gross way.
That was laying it on too thick.
So at this point, like, if you understand, in the preparation for this episode, I listened to last Friday's episode. That's at least six-something hours of this. And now we've gone through the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 7th, because that was a Sunday. So that's 4 more episodes. I was like, I'm done. This is the episode. He's had Steve on a couple times. But when he's signing off and saying, Steve, we're going to have you on tomorrow.
You got to find out how it's done. It's the fucking, you're not going to not watch Revenge of the Sith. You hated the prequels, but you're still going to watch Revenge of the Sith, man.
I just can't resist it.
Yep.
And I'm glad I listened because Alex is changing his tune.
Speaking of Second Amendment news, Obama to bring some Sandy Hook families on Air Force One, you had to pimp out the dead children some more. Or to bring on people that sit there and look and act like actors. You know, they're sitting there laughing while watching this. 2 seconds later. Turn your guns in. I mean, it's like, wow, man, my kids have been killed like this. I'd be saying, you know, why was Adam Lanza on all these psychotropic drugs?
So what's really particularly jarring about that is that when he's saying that people look and act like actors, he's specifically talking about Robbie Parker, the news conference that he gave where he appeared to change tones right before he started speaking.
Right.
This is the exact same thing that the caller a couple months back asked Alex about, and Alex said this is offensive to say this sort of thing about someone who lost their child. This is a 180 degree split. He is now making fun of this guy and using it to suggest that these people look and act like actors. He's still creating it in the form of a disjunction where he says that Obama is having these people on the plane to either exploit the dead kids or to associate with all these people who look and act like actors. That is a massive shift. And it doesn't seem like a coincidence that Steve Pachinik has so deeply insinuated himself on the show.
Yeah.
And Alex is presenting him as an expert. He's gone to South Korea to report for Alex. If you take that seriously, you have to take the other things he's bringing to the table seriously. And one of them is that no one died at Sandy Hook. I think that this is this feels like a byproduct of giving Steve credibility.
Yep.
It's insane.
Yeah. Or it's a byproduct of Steve telling you how credible Steve is, and you being like, well, obviously Steve told me he's credible and he says nice things about me, so he must be credible.
He does mention that they're like talking and shit, and you got to assume that it's very likely that Steve is telling him that stuff off air.
Well, and we talked a lot about other things that would factor into that switch, but it seems obvious in retrospect. The fact that Obama talked to them specifically and personally, in person, would of course be one of those things of like, oh, the president talked to them? Alex is like, clicks in, there's no way the president would talk to a real father. He would, cause he knew that it's a false flag, so he would have had to kill the guy's kid. So the only way that Obama can actually talk to the father of one of the victims is if there are no victims.
Sure.
That kind of bullshit.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a shift. It's happening.
Yeah.
Alex, he always presents himself as being against the actor idea, or at least he has for a good bit.
Resistance.
Well, no, and kind of like, let's not get crazy about things. This next clip clearly is in contradiction with that.
By the way, Adan Salazar found two different people from the Batman shooting that are admitted actors. In fact, some of them are in pretty good sized movies that were official victims in it. They're in Aurora. And I told him back at the time, I said, don't do that report. We don't need to get off into that because the public just isn't ready for it. But I want him to go dig those up again.
There's a difference between saying this is a sidetrack, we don't need to get into this, and saying the public's not ready for it.
Yeah.
The public's not ready for it is indicative of you believe this, but you don't think you can get away with it yet.
Yeah.
That's what he's expressing. Adan Salazar came up with his report calling victims in the Aurora shooting actors, and Alex is like, I don't know. Let's run it by legal. And then legal said, I don't know if you can get away with this. Then the climate change, and everyone's calling the Sandy Hook people actors.
Yep.
You got Steve, you got Fetzer, you got James Tracy, you got Wolfgang Helbig, who still hasn't appeared at all in any of this, so I don't know what's going on there, but you have this, this rising acceptability of this rhetoric, this narrative. The public is now ready for this. Also, now's probably the time I can just reveal this, because I don't really give a fuck. Everybody always asks whether or not Alex is aware of our show.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, I've said, I don't know. I do know that he is aware of our show now.
Yeah.
Because that guy who created the report on the actors in the Aurora shooting, Adan Salazar, one of Alex's longtime producers, follows me on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know why he would do that.
Because
I never tweet.
somebody told him about this hot new show, and he just wanted to see when they tweeted out their next episode. He hasn't had a chance to listen yet.
Right.
He just wanted to make sure he was aware.
So Alex's producers are very keenly aware that we do this.
Yeah.
So good job back in 2013, by the way, Adan, coming up with theories about Aurora victims being actors. Also cool to hear Alex say that. Hope you're in the lawsuit.
Yeah, that is funny.
Alex might be throwing you under the bus a little
that
bit.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So,
Salazar, get out.
It's too late for him,
it's
I think.
It's too late now, yeah.
So,
you gotta go down.
Alex talks a little more about how the Aurora victims are actors.
But expanding on this, these are people that are admitted actors. And I don't mean just all these wannabe actors. I mean, they're really actors. And they're on the news going, look, I have my pay stub. Yes, I saw it all. One guy acted alone. We need to restrict the Second Amendment.
So there we go.
Yep.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump from here. If you're saying this about people who survived the Aurora shooting, it makes literally no difference for you to bridge the gap to Sandy Hook.
No, it really doesn't.
It doesn't. He's there. He's arrived.
Yep.
At least by the beginning of April. It's before.
We didn't even get all the way to the bombing.
No, it's a week before the bombing. He's accelerating his rhetoric in terms of the existential threat that the globalists present to you. He's encouraging people to harass the globalists. And at the same time, he's scaling his rhetoric around these false flags to now incorporate so much talk of them being actors. If you combine all that stuff together, he's whipping his audience into a frenzy. Mm. He's advising people to go and document and follow them doing evil stuff, and including grieving families as members of the people who are involved with the globalist plots.
Right.
If you include all three of those things that are very definitely happening around this same time, You have everything he's being sued for. Absolutely correct. He is doing that. He is absolutely doing that.
Yep.
The defense of, like, other people were saying this stuff online is absolutely true. It is. But I don't think it's exculpatory, because the level of credibility he gave these arguments by his own show, like the prevalence and the high profile of his own show, and by associating them with Steve Pachenik and elevating Steve and his theories with his show, I don't think anybody in the world would have been in a position to do what he did. Like, it's not, like, I don't know if that makes it any more likely that he'll be found guilty. I don't know if that makes what he did somehow legally worse, but I can't think of any person who could have done the damage that he is doing to these people. He was in a unique position, and he did exactly the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that, and it's abundantly clear to me.
Yeah.
It's very depressing.
Yeah, that is...
It's kind of what you expected to find, though, really.
Well, of course, of course. Well, I mean, I guess the issue is going to turn out to be that, like, we have proven everything that needs to be proven in terms of this is a wrong and bad and awful thing that led to countless pain. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means it's illegal. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where the biggest issue that we run into with an investigation like this is that there's absolutely no way that you can come away from this with the information that we have laid out and think, Alex was doing great things.
He meant well.
Yeah, he did not mean well. No. He's a fucking dick, and he's doing this, and he's using people, and he's destroying everything. And the biggest failing of our legal system might be that the law might just go like, well, yeah, but it turns out that's okay.
Well, there's...
You know, like, that's fucked up.
I think there's two points that are really interesting, and that is that Alex's defense of, like, I barely talked about Sandy Hook after it happened is kind of true.
Kind of.
It's irrelevant. But yes, it's kind of true.
Right.
Like, so what he tells himself to let himself off the hook for this stuff is, like, I can see why he's bought his own bullshit on that.
Right, 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 right.
And then the second thing is he could probably fall back behind some version of this that he could tell himself. And that is, I wasn't aware of the consequences of my actions.
Mm-hmm.
I think a little bit later in this episode, we will see clear evidence that that can't be true.
Yeah.
So Alex, on this episode, gets another update from Steve.
Oh, God.
Steve is in Korea. Bow, 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 bow.
I'm just going to get a 10-minute update from Dr. Steve Pachenik here, and then I'm going to get back into all the world news.
Big world news. So what's going on is that Steve is they're fixing up his phone line or whatever. They're trying to get in touch with him, but he pimps Steve's coming up. And then while he's vamping, this is what Alex says.
I mean, it is just wall-to-wall criminal activity. There are tens of thousands of private intelligence groups now that have been given full national security access to everything. So understand, it's not just Nixon spying on you with your IRS records, and he was going to go to jail for that until he stepped down. Now,
is that
thousands
it?
And thousands, including quasi-foreign mercenary groups, are given above top secret clearances to listen to your phones, get in your computers, your bank accounts, and they put it on the news. Oh, intelligence agencies, look at your bank account every day. Intelligence agencies, listen to you. Private contractors. I mean, it is just the age of the criminal.
You know what's hilarious? He's waiting to talk to Steve Pachenik, someone who's been advocating for exactly that for a decade this point.
Yeah.
Steve has been putting out papers and journals about the need for private intelligence companies to take over for the government. He's been a customer of Stratfor for years and sent emails to them talking about how eventually you'll be the ones who will take care of all this and we could get rid of all the government agencies. Alex has no idea that he is on the phone with someone who advocates for, stands for, and promotes the very thing that he is sitting here complaining about while he gets Steve on the phone.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Man, there's this word. Shit, what's it? It's not German. No, it's just ironic.
While he's waiting for Steve, he touches on a couple issues here and there, and he defines what the globalist sort of goal is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are just running wild. And their main drive is destroying the family, destroying men and women, destroying normalcy. This is a group of mentally ill deviants. What do you think the Nazis were? A bunch of deviants. What do you think the communists were? A bunch of deviants.
Is that it?
I mean, have you read about Hitler, Mao Zedong, Stalin, Lenin? These are their own writings, the stuff they were into. Ultimate weirdos.
Such weirdos.
Now, obviously, complete badasses, though.
Studs.
Studs. But weirdos.
So when he's saying that the globalists want to destroy normalcy, what you have to do is consider how Alex defines normalcy. That's an important piece of the equation. I think we've done a pretty good job over the course of this show defining and taking clues statements from him about what he thinks is normal.
All right, so let's just pull back. Like, let's just do, like, you know those composite sketches where they have, we inputted like a 10 million faces and we've got the exact, like, mathematically modeled average face. Mm-hmm. If you could do that, like, in your head for what he thinks that a normal average face that needs to be protected is, what kind of characteristics do you think there?
It looks a lot like Alex. Maybe when he was younger. So
it looks a lot like what Hitler would have asked for too.
Alex in this next clip is kind of mad that people are suggesting that him and all of his right-wing dumb friends are just repeating things from chain emails when they really are just like fewer chain emails
or what Steve Pachenik says.
And then the narrative with Steve escalates.
Here we go.
The host didn't even know what was happening as I was driving into work on 590 going, that's just in your chain emails. None of this is happening. None of this is happening. As if we're so weak-minded, they sit there and tell us this isn't happening. I'm sorry. Let's go to Dr. Steve Pachenik, who doesn't need an introduction. He flew out there to cover it. Former top hostage negotiator for the State Department and crisis manager. Helped get the Camp David Accords through. Was involved with General Boykin founding Delta Force in 1979. And has also been involved using psychological warfare to overthrow governments. And he says, he just told us during the break, he's got to leave very soon because they're putting major pressure on him now, the globalist intelligence groups, to kick him out of the country.
Oh, no. They're going to kick Steve out of South Korea.
Sorry, Alex. I gotta get to a hair appointment. Sorry about that, Alex.
But listen,
the globalists are kicking me out of Korea.
I have dinner with some fellow retirees, so I gotta go. Oh, I'm kicked out of the country.
Korea's gone. No, yeah. They're gonna bomb us if I don't leave.
Man, this next clip is just Steve like going swinging for the fences in flattering Alex.
Yeah, he's going
for it. So crazy.
This is gross.
But first off, Doc, what do you think about my rant about authoritarianism?
Well, you know, it's ironic. You and I have telepathic feelings. You're far more assertive and a little bit, quite frankly, without being facetious, you're far more historically referenced. I was so impressed with the Plato and the Nietzsche reference that I was taken aback and I had to go read some. But let me just get back to exactly what you were saying.
That's amazing.
No.
Steve Pachenik, holder of multiple high-level degrees.
Get the fuck out of here.
International hostage negotiator extraordinaire.
God damn it.
Has never read Plato or Nietzsche.
Oh, man.
Get the fuck out of
here. Look, I don't even want to release these shows anymore because if people just acted like Steve Pachenik did, they could rule the world. Mm-hmm. Any one of our listeners could just take Steve's little tricks of the trade and work their way up to CEO of a company or perhaps even president. And we can't allow this information out there.
Well, it requires the recipient of it being kind of vaguely narcissistic and
like there's a shortage?
Probably not. So Steve has some complaints about flying because he definitely flew.
Because he totally flew.
He flew to South Korea. He definitely
flew Spirit. I think he flew Spirit to South Korea.
He has some complaints about that, though, and they might be racist.
Of course.
I go through TSA. I had to go three times to TSA in Miami, San Francisco, and elsewhere. They were pathetic. The minorities who ran it were illiterate. They could not speak English. The ones who could speak English were dumb.
That's not a good look.
Wow.
That's,
Your
problem with
that.
The TSA seems to be the minorities there aren't smart enough for you.
That did seem to be his main
Steve.
Issue.
Steve.
Did seem to be his main issue.
Steve!
Hmm.
That's not good.
You can just, Ah, man, that's right. You can just still be old man racist in 2013. Because we had a black president, we were all like, maybe we can let this slide. They're going to die soon anyway. So the guy says, oh, minorities are stupid. And you're like, shut up, old man, house phone, go back inside. And so then here we are.
Over the course of the time that we've been looking at Steve Pachenik these last couple weeks, as he's shown up on Alex's show more frequently, as he's become clearly involved in Alex's drift towards what will ultimately destroy his life.
Yeah. Can't come soon enough.
There have been a number of times when he said things like, I created Delta Force, for example, where it's like, I don't know about this. I was 06 at 32. I don't know about this.
He both stopped and caused 9/11.
Those are instances of like this guy being like, I think you're full of shit, but I wouldn't call them fuck ups.
Yeah,
because I bet there's some way that he could talk his way around them. Mm-hmm. You know, like I bet you know, I bring up these problems with his timeline.
Yeah.
And like,
now I didn't create Delta Force, but I was around it. I was on the team. I was working on there. I signed off on a couple of things.
I'm sure he's smart enough to talk his way out of that.
Sure.
This next clip, he fucked up.
Okay.
Even Clinton, the slick Willie, a total sociopath, a drug addict, was recruited at Yale as a CIA asset. I was on the board in the Fulbright, where we gave out Fulbright scholarships to CIA potential candidates. When he went to Oxford, and his roommate was Strove Talbot, he never even finished the education.
He was on the Fulbright board.
Steve really fucked up.
Dan, are you saying that if we were doing this at the right time, Steve Pachenik might have awarded us a Fulbright scholarship?
He really, really fucked up.
Everyone who has ever been on the board is documented.
It's literally impossible for him to have been on the board that gave Bill Clinton a Fulbright scholarship, mostly because Bill Clinton never got a Fulbright scholarship. He was a Rhodes Scholar. But he also worked as a clerk for Senator J. William Fulbright while he was in college, and I think that's what he's mixing up.
Right.
That was between 1964 and 1967 that Bill Clinton was a clerk, and since Steve was born in 1943, he would have had to have been 21 years old at that point if he's mixing up, like, I got him a scholarship at the clerk office or whatever.
Yep.
So any time that Bill Clinton was formally involved with Fulbright, Steve would have been 21 years old, and it's impossible that he was a member of any board.
He also hadn't even been drafted yet.
It's true. This is a legitimately gigantic fuck-up. For one, he's claiming that he was on the board of the Fulbright program. And while it is true that the State Department heads up a lot of that stuff, and I think Steve is aware of that, and that's why he's doing this, it's a completely different part of the State Department than he was ever involved in. It's the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. Steve presents this world. I mean, we touched on this already. He's gallivanting around the State Department from section to section like an interoffice Forrest Gump, getting mixed up in whatever historically important things happen in any department. Except in this instance, he's describing something that didn't happen, namely Bill Clinton getting a Fulbright. By the time Steve set foot in the State Department in 1974 as like an intern or whatever, as a consultant, Bill Clinton had already gotten his law degree from Yale. He'd met Hillary, and he'd moved to Texas with her to campaign for George McGovern. There's literally zero chance that what he's saying is true, and Alex accepts this shit unquestioningly. Mm-hmm. This is not a small slip-up where Steve can say Fulbright, but he meant Rhodes. If that were the case, then Steve would have to be claiming that he was on the board of the Rhodes Trust in 1968, which is completely unbelievable, particularly because, according to his timeline, that's the year he got drafted into the Army.
Right.
He's saying Fulbright because he knows the State Department is involved in the Fulbright program, and he knows Alex's audience is stupid enough to know that, not to know that Bill Clinton got a Rhodes scholarship to go to Oxford, not a Fulbright. This guy is a pathological liar. Mm. Like, if you try and pull something like this off, you can't help yourself.
Because there's no need.
No.
You didn't need to add that little bit. You don't need to add in the little expertise for every question you're asked. You're an expert on... Barnes doesn't do anything, and somehow he's an expert on fucking everything. Mm-hmm. Do you know why he can get away with it? Because every time he's asked a question, he doesn't start with, oh, well, and that is important to me, because while I was the premier of China from 1972 to 1973, I would be well aware of the best answer to your question.
I led the assault on Ho Chi Minh. What? The fuck
you know,
out of
I
here.
Had a lot of thoughts on Texan independence while I was fighting at the Alamo. I remember saying specifically to the guy next to me, you hear me.
I know Colonel Travis. I actually am Colonel Travis. Little known fact.
Yep.
It almost, to me, kind of feels like he's doing this for sport, like
it
lying
does.
To Alex, just trying to see how far he can push things. And I mean, it turns out the answer is however far he wants. It's crazy to me that he tried to sell this on Alex's show, that he's on the board of the Fulbright program, what they were going to give one to Bill, and Alex still listened to him for 6 years.
Jesus.
Maybe 5 years. But
yeah.
Still, it's crazy that this isn't like, we're done.
Yeah.
Like, even if in the heat of the moment, you're not able to pull up the resources, like, Alex doesn't even, like, he doesn't know that Bill Clinton didn't get a Fulbright.
He doesn't know that Bill Clinton got a Rhodes.
Right. He doesn't know these things.
He doesn't know anything.
So in the conversation, this doesn't raise red flags.
Of course not.
But even after the fact, Alex isn't like, I got to check up on some of this information. Steve claimed he's on the board of the Fulbright program.
How would Alex check up on it? He doesn't even have a LexisNexis account yet.
Good point. So I want to also address one thing really quick, and that is that if you listen very carefully to that clip, because I listened back to it a couple times, and it's not clear that Steve is saying that they gave Bill a Fulbright.
Right.
Just when they were on the board and they offered him one.
Right.
Which is a slight plausible deniability to be like, if my criticism is that Steve gave him this thing, then he could be like, I didn't say that. I said we offered him one. He didn't take it.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
That's all good and well. The timeline is still a huge problem.
He couldn't
have been involved in anything before the point that Bill had already graduated from law school. The time at Oxford was well behind him.
Mm.
The timeline does not work out. It just does not. There's literally zero chance he would have been involved in any of this shit in any way. This is a complete lie. History does not back this up. And Steve flippantly throws it out in order to insinuate himself greater into these big events that Alex is interested in and curious about and prove that Bill Clinton's a CIA plant.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost on the level of like, I went back and I was reading some Plato and then when Nietzsche and I were writing about the Ubermensch, I was really reminded of how great he was at looking into the abyss. And I just thought, I'm going to work with Alex Jones from here on out.
I'm going to give him a chance to look at this abyss that I got going. Like, oh, Jesus. So anyway, their interview ends. And then Alex takes offense that people are using a particular word about him. And he says it a bunch, and it's pretty funny.
I mean, I cannot believe that people go, Alex Jones is radical. Alex Jones is scary. Alex Jones is spooky. Now, that's a Glenn Beck quote. I'm spooky. I'm spooky because I recognize what's going on, and I'm freaking out about it, saying, hey, we're in deep trouble. No, I'm pointing out stuff that is spooky. I'm not spooky. I'm talking about things that are spooky. Real spooky.
Stop it.
Is your show haunted?
Stop it. It doesn't. The word doesn't mean anything anymore. You did the thing where you said it too often.
I talk about things that are spooky, like
spookily ghosts.
You don't talk about spooky things.
You have to say, like, spooky things.
Coast to Coast talks about spooky things.
Ah, those are some spooky things.
You talk about bullshit.
He talks about spooks or CIA spooky things.
I guess. Alleged. So when I told you earlier that Alex has every reason to know what the consequences of his actions are.
Right. I got spooked out by.
I was talking about this clip.
You know, we had the Secret Service show up here again this morning, and none of the managers were here because Rob Dew works till about 7 or 8 at night, so he gets here at 10:30. I was actually here. I was out there taking a shower because I went and exercised this morning. I got a shower back there. Tim Frugier was over on the other side, so they just told him, Alex should be here in 10 minutes. I was actually there about 2 minutes, and I come back out there because they have a subpoena for an idiot that went on the Infowars.com comments and said he wanted to go after somebody. I don't know what yet.
That's a pretty spooky fucking thing to do.
Uh-huh. Alex has every if this isn't made up. Like, I know the times that he said, like, the FBI is calling me and stuff. I don't really believe. But what he's describing, I do think, is probably a natural consequence of the things that are happening. It's completely believable that authorities showed up because people had been making death threats on his message board.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can't see Alex not being aware of the connection between the rhetoric he's been using since, I mean, for quite a while, but ramping up since April 3rd, since this period that we're going over. This direct targeting of the veterans and the Christians is like, there's an existential threat to you. You got to follow these demons or, you know, all this stuff. The consequence of that is people on his message boards saying they're going to go after these people. Mm-hmm. That is a natural reaction. I don't know who the person that this person was targeting is because Alex doesn't bring it up.
Right.
But this is what you would expect to see.
Yep.
Alex can't be naive of that. The Secret Service fucking showed up.
Well, and it even then it would be like they would do it in such a like – it's not like they're, hey, Alex – we're here because you're the reason. They're like, hey, we need to get your records. These people went onto your website and left threatening messages. And he's like, oh, cool. I will definitely go do that. And then on the show, he's like, ah, they're coming to Gallows Hall and all that shit. Only increasing the likelihood that these comments will continue to come.
Right, right. But the thing is that as he's presenting this, there is almost like a naivete and a disconnect he's trying to have between his actions and the result of someone posting death threats towards somebody. Mm. Like, no authorities would show up if it was something vague. It's a specific threat.
Yeah.
And it's a specific threat that someone reported to them. And it's a specific threat that they thought was worth their time to look into, which means that it's pretty serious.
Yeah.
This is a direct consequence of the rhetoric that he uses. He's trying to pretend that he doesn't understand that and that's not the case. But as he's talking about how he's not worried about the Secret Service, he launches directly into the exact behavior that elicits death threats from his audience.
I'm not worried. Whatever happens to me, I'm trying to do the right thing for the children, the million plus children that CPS takes every year and rapes. And you know, Jocelyn Elders, you know, where they teach him how to masturbate.
It's
a pervert guild. I mean, you think I'm worried about my life when I know you've got kids pinned down all over the country, raping the daylights out of them right now, and I feel guilty that I'm not kicking down doors, stopping them right now, and I just sit here trying to wake people up? You think I care? You think I'm worried about you? You think I'm like you, a coward, a sack of garbage? You think I'm like you? I'm not like you. I'm a red-blooded person who is not even near good, but that simply doesn't want to hurt innocent people. You people are a bunch of delusional scum. And I'm going to tell you something. Society is going to collapse. This country is going to be judged. So you have all your partial birth abortions and you shoot your kids up and watch them have convulsions and brain damage them. This country is run by psycho killer demons, folks. That's all I got to tell you. That's all I got to tell you. And you know what? I seem crazy to people because I'm awake and I see it.
What he's expressing in that clip, I mean, what you hear is a guy who's saying he feels guilty for not kicking down these people's doors.
Yep.
If you are someone who is so inclined to believe the things that Alex says and someone who is susceptible to the way he manipulates people's emotions, it wouldn't be hard to hear that and be like, this is Alex saying that I should be doing those sorts of things.
Yep.
Because Alex is expressing that he wishes he was doing those things.
Uh-huh.
This isn't okay. This is absolutely, I think over the course of this episode, the things that you see are a trend of Steve Pachenik manipulating Alex, having him around his finger with this pageant of going to South Korea. And then more importantly, you see this escalation of rhetoric towards direct targeting of people who are the supposed enemies. And you see the consequences of that when the Secret Service shows up about one of his commenters. And his response to that is not to take a look in the mirror and say, is it possible that the things that I'm doing are eliciting this reaction? It's to say, fuck it. I'm doubling down. I'm going to make it worse.
Yeah.
I'm going to engage in the exact behaviors that elicit this response. And I'm going to do it so extremely. The CPS is having sex with your kids. They just want to kill you with vaccines. The whole power structure is demons, and I feel guilty that I'm not killing them myself. This is unacceptable. I don't know how to put it any more bluntly. This is fucking unacceptable. I don't think it's accidental. This is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
He can't not be aware of the consequences of his actions. He can't not understand how this works. He's doing this for a reason.
Yeah.
And I can't get away from the thought that the reason is because when these, like, these things happen, he profits off them.
Yeah.
I can't think that he wants to hurt innocent people by sending crazy people after them. I just don't think that he's that much of a psychopath.
Yeah.
It's possible, but it seems so unlikely to me.
Mm-hmm.
The only other explanation I can come up with is a business motivation. Yeah. And it makes sense.
He doesn't care that people get hurt.
Right.
They get hurt, but he doesn't care.
Right.
What motivates him is the money that he gets, and if they get hurt, fuck.
And the furthering of his narratives, the confirmation of his narratives. Because if one of his listeners goes out and commits some sort of egregious act, motivated by the things that he convinces them of and manipulates them about, when it comes out in the media that they were fans of his, it also confirms all of his narratives about how they're going to do false flags and blame the Patriots.
Right.
What
you're saying is he's in a comfortable spot.
It appears that it is.
Until he gets sued.
You could see it as a comfortable spot.
Yeah.
Because people are giving him a pass at this
point. Exactly.
But all I can see is just craft, it's craft. Yeah. There's intention, there's motivation, and it's, no matter what it is, for me to say what it is, would be way beyond my pay grade. I have no fucking idea, but I do know it's not good. Whatever it is ill will, and just monstrous. I think that when I look at stuff like this, I can't escape from feeling like holy shit, even our show doesn't really capture how bad a person he is.
Yeah.
Like we've spent almost 3 years going over the granular detail,
exhaustively,
the ways he lies and manipulates people, and to look at this in the aftermath of Sandy Hook and see how this has progressed to the point that it's got to now. Like, I do let him off the hook a tiny bit because of how much Steve is manipulating him, obviously. Mm. Like, that is dopey to some extent.
Right.
But it doesn't excuse any of this. Like, the other stuff that's going on isn't Steve. The stuff that is actually leading him towards telling people to harass innocent folk is not Steve.
No, that's the reason Steve chose him.
The stuff that's escalating towards like intentional radicalization of subgroups is not Steve. The part where he's coming into accepting the Sandy Hook stuff is almost certainly Steve.
Yeah, we'll give Steve and his flattery that one.
But that's only one area where this behavior is manifesting. Like through his behavior, he's trying to get people to go follow VA doctors, abortion doctors, people who are pastors at churches that are globalist. Like, he's saying they're clergy response team people. They're in on it, trying to put you and your family in a FEMA camp. Like, there's a lot of people that he's trying to get that treatment applied to that was applied to the Sandy Hook families. Like, it's a far more universal thing than probably we even expected when we set out for this.
Yeah.
Like, he's legitimately presenting the idea that they're in the middle of a civil war already, and the answer to that is targeted harassment of the people that I've determined are our enemies.
Right.
And that's escalating. It's not something that's been the case for a large portion of this investigation. As we've gotten into April, it's really, really kicking off.
Yeah. That's weird. Because as far as the stupid versus evil kind of continuum there, you know, obviously the motive, the operating motive is profit and, I guess, little bits of belief and, you know, useful fiction and
but all of those things are really only useful as like a means to the end of profit.
Right.
Like,
right.
Him getting people to agree with him is only useful as it's transmitted or transmuted into they put up bumper stickers. They spread the word about the show.
Right.
They buy my products. They sign up with Youngevity.
So he doesn't believe any of this shit?
I think he believes a bit of it, but like, I don't think he believes the severity of it.
See, it almost makes me go the opposite direction. The way that he doesn't give a fuck. And the way that he's actually engaging in literal stochastic terrorism is almost more like he genuinely believes that we are in a civil war and that there's only one way he's going to come out on top.
No, I don't believe that.
Like, it's that, it's that kind of level of...
I think he probably believes a lot of the, like, smaller, I hate commies kind of stuff. And,
right.
Cultural Marxism and white people are the best.
They are!
Like, I think he believes those things, but I don't think he believes the severity of the situation that he's presenting.
Yeah.
I think he's keenly aware that a lot of that is just stuff he's hyping up for the explicit purpose of... Whether it's drawing in more people, making himself interesting, keeping people who are on board more scared, radicalizing the groups that he's already got on board. Like, I think that those are the goals that he has. And I think he has to know that he's just full of shit about the scale.
Yeah.
But that's just the sense that I get. I have no idea.
Yeah, I suppose with the radicalizing groups things, that could also just be outreach, like, yeah. I need more pastors. So let's have a pastor focused one and they're going to talk to other pastors.
But
we're going to convince themselves.
But it's so dangerous the way he's doing it.
Absolutely.
Like it's not right. Like, hey, we have a great message. And you know, this week we'd like to really focus on the church.
Right.
And you know, here are some of the issues about the church and here are some of the things you can do. And when you talk to your pastor, maybe ask them questions about, you know, this scripture. Or
no,
something.
You shouldn't like, talk to your pastor. Your pastor's a fucking demon. You should kill him.
There is a responsible way to do it, and it's not this. Mm. It's not create the appearance of an existential threat that's coming to wipe out all churches in America, and it's being done by Islam. That's not the way to do it. The way to keep people or deal with the VA issues isn't to say they're all snitches and never talk to them. Like, that's not how you do that. That's how you get people in unhealthy spaces, but keep them in yours.
Mm.
So I don't have any respect for any of this behavior. Like, it's just monstrous. And the Secret Service showing up is so indicative of how he's aware of the consequences.
Mm.
Like, it's damning stuff. Like, that's all I can see here. So we got one more clip.
Okay.
Because I wanted this episode to come full circle.
All right.
I should tell you that about an hour of this episode is spent interviewing this basketball player who's the InfoWars team representative.
No.
It's not important. It's just about the products that are really great. And this guy seemed kind of interesting, but I don't really care.
Any good dunk videos?
No, it's not Rex Chapman.
No Rex Chapman videos?
Damn. Our episode today began on April 3rd, and it began with Alex finding out that there was a Secret Service agent who was a shape-shifting reptilian.
The shape-shifting reptilian shows up on the show.
And he decided that it is Dan Bongino, and $500 to the person who can get me an interview with him.
Here we go.
It turns out he is very available, because he shows up on the 8th. And here's how Alex talks about having him on.
Okay.
Well, Dan Bongino is a now-retired senior... Secret Service agent that led details all over the world with Obama and others, and he's going to be joining us. He's a pro-Second Amendment guy. There's also a funny conspiracy about him out there on the internet. So we'll be talking. We were just laughing during the break talking about it. So we're going to be talking to him here in just a moment.
That conspiracy isn't about him. You have made that about him. And I'm sure they were laughing about it off air when Dan was like, that can't be me.
I wasn't
involved.
I didn't work there.
Isn't it funny that people think that? By people, it's just Alex. No one else thinks that. In all the corners of the conspiracy world that talks about this stuff, no one thinks it's Dan Bongino except Alex. Now, interestingly, in the interview, Alex doesn't bring this up because he knows that if he does, Dan will say, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been. I retired almost 2 years before that. It can't be him. He insinuates.
Oh, he doesn't say that. He specifically doesn't say anything about, he fucking knows.
Of course he knows.
He fucking knows.
Of course he knows.
Come on.
In the introduction here, he insinuates
exactly.
That this is a conspiracy about him because it still elevates that narrative of everybody who supports guns as being targeted. So it's again. Fuck this guy.
Fuck this guy.
Right.
Fuck you, Alex.
Oh God, this time frame is just so like anxiety provoking. It's so terrifying to look at because you know the consequences. You know what's coming, and like you see the behavior. That if any of it was different, if any of it was more sane, if he just behaved like a responsible human being, didn't lie to people, didn't manipulate people, asked himself for one fucking second, is it possible that Steve is just making this shit up? If he did any of those things, crises could have been averted. People's lives could have been way better. Like, it's unthinkable, like, how every single decision had to be bad for Alex to end up in the position he is in. And against all odds, he made every wrong decision.
Yeah, it does seem like he hit tails 50 times in a row.
And for that, I feel no pity for him.
Nope. You flipped it over every time you hit heads, you just flipped it over and you're like, I know I should have done that, but I think I'm just going to flip it over.
It's too interesting for it to be tails.
It better be tails again, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll be back on Wednesday with another, look at this, real pile of shit.
Indeed, we will.
But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
You bet it is. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
And we're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. You can also go, if you wanted to listen to the show, you could go to iTunes, you could download it, you could leave a review, you could do all those fun things.
Yeah.
But the best way to get the show is what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to go to the Ravenswood Metro station.
Okay.
Have you ever been there?
No.
So you go to the Ravenswood Metro
station. I've been past it, but I've never gone inside.
It's right near the Marianas.
I have a rule against going to the Metro. I don't take the Metro.
You don't
anything.
Take the Metro?
Never.
Then you're never going to get the good
suburbs
form of
are
this
trash.
Podcast.
I've said this 100 times,
well,
and I stand by it.
Then let me tell you this.
I don't mean that at all. I've been to the suburbs to do shows.
The good news is
very
this.
Very nice suburbs.
You don't have to leave the Metro station.
Oh, okay.
See, it's actually in a hidden safe deposit box underneath the 13th to the left tile.
13, a very important number.
Exactly. Now, you chip that open, pull that up, a hand will reach out from beneath the ground, giving you the safe deposit box.
Why are there always disembodied hands on this?
I just like a good disembodied hand.
All right.
And then, of course, inside there is a stick drive.
Of course.
Best way.
Absolutely.
Best way to listen to the show.
We will be back, but until then, I'm Neo, I'm Leo, I'm DZX Clark, I'm the Jesus Lizard.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.